Child Health Outcomes Steering Committee meeting. I think we have everyone from the committee here who will be attending, for the exception of one committee member who will actually be attending in person. I think it's Ellen Chalmers-Becker. I don't think she's here yet. We also have a few members who are going to be calling in and joining us on the phone as well. My name is Nicole McElvin, and it's nice to finally put faces to names here. And I'm joined by a few NCS staff, Ruby Winkler, of course, Heidi Bosley, Suzanne. Hey there. And Ashley Morsell is also working on the project. Also, we have Charlie Homer and Marina Weiss, who are our lovely co-chairs on this. So I'm just going to allow them to make a few welcome and introduction comments, and then we'll go ahead and have the committee introduce themselves and move forward from there.
My only comments are welcome to
I'm sure
you pressed the button. The main reason I did that was to demonstrate the inappropriate and not the appropriate way of speaking. But welcome, everyone. It's great to see you. We do have a lot of work to do over the next 2 days, and I'm very excited about it. Just want to at least let you reemphasize to you my sense of the importance of the work that we're doing here. This is one of the key committees that's looking at outcomes. It's one of the important committees that's starting to develop a comprehensive set of measures for children's health care. So we're really ground setting, I think, in both of those areas. So very excited about it. We've got a very diverse set of measures we're going to be looking at, things that are from, you know, quite technical hospital-based measures to quite less technical, broad community-based outcome measures, which is what we asked for when we first met. So we got what we asked for. Now we have to make decisions about it. So it should be fun. Who's that? Marie?
Well, I'm delighted to welcome all of you to our 2 days' worth of very intense work on behalf of NQF and moving these measures forward. I would just say I agree with everything that Charlie has outlined, and the only thing I would add is that NQF is a really important player with regard to the consensus process, and so it's this is a wonderful opportunity for us to launch some pediatric measures that hopefully will set the base for future work as well. There's a great deal of interest in Congress and within the administration, and hopefully we will tuck into that agenda and help set the pace, not only for the pediatric measures, but just for a more robust approach to quality generally. So it's terrific to be a part of this NQF effort, and thank you so much, Nicole, for all the prep work that you and Rima did to get us ready to spend 2 days working hard. So thank you.
Okay, just a few housekeeping items. The restrooms are, as you exit these doors to your right, there are two keys located on that back table if you need to use restrooms. Everyone has a thumb drive that basically has all of the materials that I've emailed you over the course of the coming week in one spot. You don't have to use them, but it may make it easier rather than kind of fishing through emails and that sort of thing. The agenda, the copy of the agenda that I sent you yesterday with the final materials was an older copy. We have revised it. So we just made some new copies and handed that out to you all so you know that. Just so you know. And also be sure to use the microphones, as Charlie just alluded to, when you're talking. That's basically so the transcriber can hear the information and also so the participants on the conference call line can also hear as well. So I'd like to just have each committee member introduce themselves and also go through disclosures, if there are any, amongst the members.
I think you're first up.
Donna Sassab, Dallas, Texas, and I have no disclosures.
Tom Agnery from Rochester, New York, no disclosures.
Phil Keyboard, Children's, Minnesota, no disclosures.
Nancy Fisher, Seattle, Washington, no disclosures.
David Clark, Denver, Colorado, no disclosures.
Kathy Jenkins from the Children's Hospital in Boston. I'm the Chief Safety and Quality Officer for Children's Hospital Boston, and we submitted measures as a steward, the hospital did, and Program for Patient Safety and Quality, which I direct. And I had indirect involvement in all the measures we suggest we sent in, and for two of them, more direct involvement. So I'm going to abstain from all conversations related to any of the measures which we stewarded. I don't believe I have any other conflicts with any of the other measures.
Lee Partridge, National Partnership for Women and Families. No disclosures.
Bonnie Zuma, UCLA. No disclosures. Sharon Dougherty, Duke University Medical Center, representing National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners. No disclosures.
Joseph Rao from the University of Pittsburgh. No disclosures.
Alan Lieberthal, Kaiser Permanente, Panorama City, California. No disclosures.
Hi, everyone. I'm Suzanne Tabiash. I'm a project manager here at NQF.
I'm Heidi Bosley, Senior Director of Performance Measures here at NQF.
Okay. Do we have anyone who's called in? Committee members?
Yep, this is Marlene Miller, Vice Chair of Quality and Safety at Johns Hopkins University.
Great. Thank you, Marlene, for calling in. Anyone else? Okay, so what we're going to do for the first 20 minutes or so is we wanted just to provide a recap of what we've done to date in the project, essentially, and start to frame our discussion over looking at outcomes and process. Well, we won't be looking at process measures, but we really wanted to frame the discussion when we're looking at outcome measures and really talk about what an outcome measure is, what the committee kind of discussed at the meeting in November to sort of frame the call for measures, which ultimately was the reason why we received some of the measures we did. So I wanted to take a few minutes and go to that. Our meeting goals, obviously, are to evaluate the standards that we received during our call for measures. The committee will be asked to recommend these measures for endorsement moving forward in our consensus process. And also another very important deliverable is to identify gaps for outcome measures in children. And we will set aside time. That type of conversation probably will come up as we go through each individual measure, but we have set aside time at the end of today and also tomorrow to look at gaps in measurement. So largely, the outcomes project is funded by HHS, and as most of you all know, there are three phases to the project. Phases one and two are currently happening now. Phases three includes child health and also mental health. Our focus is on cross-cutting and condition-specific outcome measures. There is currently limited availability of existing child health outcome measures, and so we're here to expand that horizon a little bit, and also expand NQF's portfolio of measures in that particular area. To date, we have about 68 NQF-endorsed measures focused on child health. Approximately 25 of those are focused solely on outcomes, so there's definitely some room for adding to that number. Slide illustrates really a framework when you think about child health outcomes and some potential domains and ways of bucketing this information. And also when you look at these domains, this is also serves as a frame when you think of gaps as well. So potential domains include age groups, certainly, you know, adolescents to neonatals. There's many different age groups when it comes to children. Health status is particularly important. Settings of care, looking at hospitals, outpatients, and level of analysis is particularly important when we're looking at these measures. Most of them are on a population level, as you probably have noticed. A lot of the survey measures are more on a population level, not necessarily on a clinician or provider level of analysis when we're looking at measurement. Maybe did you want to add any further comment to that?
The only thing I would say to that is NQF and HHS
also are particularly interested in measures at all levels of analysis, not that any individual measure could necessarily meet all of them. There might be a couple of really good ones that could be used at all levels, but having a mixture of population-level measures as well as provider-level measures as well as clinician-level measures provides NQF with a really robust portfolio that can be used in a variety of ways by different implementers. So all of them are on the table.
That's interesting. My sense is that, well, it is unlikely that any measure can apply to all of them. It seems like it's a desirable attribute. That is, if there were measures that applied at multiple levels, that would be good because that would simplify the field. Just maybe an observation, having looked at most of the measures, my sense is that many of the people who submitted measures did not have a crisp idea what this question meant when they described what level the measure applied to. So I think that's something we as committee members are going to have to make our own judgments about, not necessarily rely on what many of the stewards suggest.
We then move to data sources for outcomes. Patient or care provider reported outcome, a clinician observed outcome, those sorts of things, vital signs, lab results. This highlights what the call for measures for the Child Health Outcomes Project, what we actually looked for. And we tried to bring this to your attention because this is really an output from the November meeting where you discussed a lot of this information. So it was things such as child and family functioning, school attendance, performance, physical fitness, symptom improvement or relief, growth and development. That includes cognitive, physical, social, emotional growth, parent, patient reported outcomes, intermediate outcomes such as blood pressure or BMI percentile, patient or family experience with care, behavioral change. And we have a second slide here, health services utilization, potentially preventable adverse social outcomes, healthcare acquired adverse events, population health indicators, and one type of measure in particular that NQF normally doesn't get is healthcare sectors that share responsibilities. And so that's looking at schools, you know, juvenile system. I believe that we have a few measures around schools. So those are fairly new to our portfolio when we're looking at in terms of quality improvement and public reporting and accountability. Let me just go back a second. Were there any questions so far on?
Nicole, as you run through that list, that page and the page before, there are some measures in there that I think we all thought we'd get, but we didn't. And do you have any sense of, I mean, there are sort of three or four that look like no-brainers. Are they not out there?
I think, Lee, that's the question. Do you know of specific measures or specific good ideas? And I think there are a lot of people who would agree there are a lot of great ideas, but no one has crafted the actual measure yet. Certainly, we used all of your contacts and everybody you could reach out to, and they were not, you know, submitted. So I think there's a certain unknown. There may be measures like that being used at local levels or within facilities for local quality improvement, but perhaps that don't rise to the level that they feel that would be appropriate for submission to NQF. So I think any number of those would address apply to various measures.
Yep. My sense would be that there's two major barriers to this process that if one is contemplating submitting measures makes it more challenging. And one is the degree of burden of the validation and use the current use of the measure. And the second one is the seemingly strict requirement that it be available for high-stakes measurement like public reporting or P4P, and depending on people's interpretation of their measure on those two axes, it can be a barrier to submission. So those are very high bars if you take them literally.
I do think there are more measures, there are more outcome measures, certainly in the pediatric research community, that we haven't received. So I think that's hypotheses sound pretty credible to me, but we did get them. But we'll have to think through afterwards what to do and how to do.
Right.
I also wanted to briefly emphasize the importance of the gaps identification. Now, I mean, all of us have participated in projects where, you know, there's always a section that says further research is needed. You come up with a list of 20 things, and you know deep in your soul that nobody ever looked at that list again, and it's kind of frustrating. I think in this case, we're in a better situation. If you look at, for example, both GIBRA legislation and the health reform legislation, it charges the U.S., specifically the health reform legislation, for identifying gaps basically on an every 3-year basis, reporting those to the Secretary of HHS, for the Secretary then to fund measurement development activities. So there is a pipeline here that's clearly articulated from the gap identification to actually measurement development and that measurement use. So I think it's more than the usual, oh yeah, we didn't get these measures and buried them at the bottom of our report.
Let me just add one thing to that. One of the activities that's going on with the group within AQF that's actually addressing that directive from the Secretary on prioritization is they actually gone back through all of our past reports and looked at that section that may not have been previously read and is now being read quite intently to help formulate some of them. So it may be a little delayed, but all of that effort was not for naught. And so... And we have been told by HHS from the very beginning that the endorsement of measures is important, but equally important. It's not an afterthought. It's not the appendix. It's not an add-on. Is the gaps analysis where, because they are in a position to use their resources to develop things appropriately within all their various agencies within HHS. So it's a very much an important outcome of this project.
And let me just tag on to Reva's point and underscore for you the fact that there is some overlap between this committee, obviously, and the group that's been working with CMS and ARC on the core measure sets, and then the second wave of pediatric interest called for in CHIPRA. Now, the reason I raise this is because it's, as Charlie said, not just a matter of coming up with a laundry list of items where further research is needed, but there is development money also associated with CHIPRA. The money is already appropriated, it's available, and HHS is interested in knowing where to deploy these and allocate these resources. So we do have an opportunity here not only to identify gaps, but maybe to prioritize and give them some direction on what we think, based on the expertise around this table, are the most promising areas in which to begin work.
Which is sort of a perfect segue to Nicole's next slide.
Yeah, what?
We will be looking at CHIPRA measures. Currently, only about, I believe it's 6 to 10 of the full set of CHIPRA measures are NQF endorsed. So we are being asked to look at the remaining set of those measures and also additional process measures for child health and to look at endorsing those measures. This project will obviously is closely related to what we're doing now. We are looking to move forward with this project really concurrent or simultaneously after we get over the hurdle of endorsing and recommending our first set of measures. We're looking to just continue the stream and to continue work directly into the CHIPRA project. Ideally, we would like all of the current steering committee members to continue along with that process. That does mean another in-person meeting and evaluating another set of measures. But, you know, we noticed very quickly that the group sitting in front of us is really sort of the cream of the crop and the people that should be at the table when it comes to child health. And we're hoping, if you're willing and if you obviously have the time, to continue on with that process. And once we're done with this meeting, we'll follow up more definitively on dates and to, you know, get your feedback on that. The tentative start date was we're looking at July of this year, and when we say start, that means that we would start with a call for measures. And, of course, you all know that's a 30-day process, so potentially an in-person meeting would be probably about September, October of this year, and that's just kind of off the top of my head. So I wanted to mention that to the group. The good thing that most committee members and projects aren't able to do that we will be is many of the measures that you don't feel apply to this project and are real process measures, we then could potentially review those within the contents of the CHIPRA project. And I know that's a challenge for many committee members is it's not appropriate for this project, but you're kind of lost in limbo and you don't really know what to do with the measure because you think it's valuable, but there is potential for many of the measures to be passed on and to move on into this second phase of the project. And so when we're looking at next steps moving from outcomes to CHIPRA, the gaps that you identify within the contents of our 2 days here will be used essentially in our call for measures, and so we'll be sure to highlight a specific section in the report as we always do to highlight those gaps and areas where you think there's room for improvement. Are there any questions about that?
Flattery will get you everywhere. The land committee, I think I was on with Reva, I mean, I would thank you as longest serving committee or whatever. So it works.
Yeah.
For the duration.
Went on for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
Wait.
I do have a question, though. So I'm a little, the CHIPRA measurement set is a defined measurement set at this point. There are the 22 measures. So there will be a call for additional process and outcome measures beyond the CHIPRA set.
To fill in
the gaps for the areas that the committee...
Yeah, my understanding is that even though we've got the first year core measures, there's an acknowledgement that it really is, there's lots of gaps and it just doesn't meet everyone's needs, and there's a desire to evolve it over the subsequent years and add in better measures, remove the ones that are maybe not so good, or replace them, revise them, update them, whatever. So that there is an evolution of that measure set. And so this will be an important input to the next year's set.
Now, let me just say that the first wave of measures called for under CHIPRA were selected in part because of the speed with which the legislation contemplated implementation. And so a great deal of attention was given to what is currently going on in states today, what would be relatively easy to get up and operational at the implementation level, what were the measures that were most comfortable for the state officials who were sitting around the table and so forth. But there was always an expectation that there would be future phases to that project. And as Reva said, correction and strengthening of the set of measures that would ultimately be used. Initially, these are to be voluntary, but over time, the direction is to make them mandatory, or at least a subset of what's available mandatory.
I just add a postscript to that, because Marina was on that committee, and I sat in a chair behind her for several days listening to their deliberations. I think you have, I forget what you called it, but the list of putting everybody on the alert that the committee was looking for, hoping to see measures and something else. I also wanted to share something, another opportunity for us, and I think this plays in very nicely. The CHIPRA legislation does direct the Secretary to report to Congress on some areas in which perhaps there are some impediments to effectively getting measures adopted and satisfactorily used. And CMS is being very open about saying they would love to have comments in whatever form that would help inform that report, which they will be pulling together sometime later this year. So I think probably things like our reports and discussions will be useful.
Charlie?
Yes, please.
This is Marlene. I just want to add that I think we go on, and I served on the committee that made those initial core measure sets, and this conversation percolated there. And it strikes me as I look at the materials we have before us that one of the things that is not so explicitly called for, but, you know, I at least would like to see that we entertain it, is that for any measure, I applaud the focus on outcomes, but we need to also ask ourselves, are there change packages that if a institution or a state or a provider or a health plan is not performing well, you can direct them on what to do to actually change that rate. You know, I think a lot of the measurement work is measurement for measurement's sake, with the hope that just measuring will improve care. And what we know is that that's not necessarily true, that we need actual toolkits. When I even look down the NQF evaluation, it's sort of implied there, but there's no explicit places that say list the packages that you know or the efforts that you know have shown to change someone's rate and improve it, so that you give people tools to fish.
That sounds like a great suggestion, really, for the NQF criteria.
Okay. Again, their definition says the measures have to be used for both accountability and improvement, but you're right, there's not much in there to back that up.
That sounds like a very, very good suggestion, Arlene. Thank you. If I could just, you know, I want to make sure we stay on schedule. I think we've had a good, broad, forward-reaching conversation, and I didn't hear anybody in the room say, oh, my God, I don't want to be on the follow-up committee, but you could certainly talk to Nicole afterwards if that's the case. Well, this will be a negative check-off process.
If you don't send the car back.
Right. What is that, benign paternalism, isn't that what I do want to reframe us, though, back to outcomes for a second, or Dr. Second, for the rest of the meeting. So while looking forward, we're going to be discussing process measures once we get to July. Right now we're focused on measures of outcome. And just want to remind the group that measures of outcome are selected because they are what's most meaningful to patients, most understandable to the public. It's what providers hope they are influencing. They don't measure everything upstream that leads to the outcomes. So those of us in the room who have been involved in, who either are responsible for hospital or clinical operations, sometimes get nervous when we see an outcome measure because we think of the 43 other things that could contribute to those outcomes. And the answer is kind of, we know that, but we're supposed to come up with measures of outcome that can be used together with other measures of processes and maybe even structures that could lead to those outcomes. But I say that in part because my sense on our phone call with some very complicated measures, which we're about to segue into, there was some discomfort really about looking at outcome measures because it didn't measure the upstream characteristics. And so I just want to reframe us back on our particular charge, whether we agree with it, you know, whether we have anxiety about it or not, but our particular charge is to identify and potentially endorse, if we think there are credible measures, measures of child health outcome. Kathy?
Thanks for saying that, Charlie, because I think that's helpful to me. I did have a question, though, because when I looked at some of the ones that were assigned to me, some of them did feel more like structural process measures, and then I just heard your comment that where those come up, perhaps we could set those aside for phase two if they're not truly outcome measures. I guess I was under the impression that the NQF staff had trained what we were getting for eligibility for this project so that those would have been filtered off, and at least the approach I took was to kind of assume, since you had given them to me, it was my job to kind of assess them according to the criteria. But if that's not the rule, I'd like to hear us, you know, kind of settle that for the entire discussion, because I think it may come up in little ways across the board.
I'll just essentially what we have is a moving target, because at the time we did the call for measures, we were intentionally very, very broad, and our interpretations for them were really quite broad. The advent of the CHIPR project and approval for going forward with that is a relatively came afterwards. So we're adjusting, as you will. So if you feel particularly that a measure is strong in and of itself but isn't appropriate for outcomes, we do have an avenue to deal with it. And so we were very loose in terms of screening anything out prior. Again, because if two pages or two slides worth of how you described outcomes gave us some pretty squishy borders. So our default was to keep it rather than kick it.
But I took your approach. I had the same impression you did, Kathy, and I took a different approach, which is I thought clearly it was a process measure and we were doing outcomes. I felt it was inappropriate for us to list as an outcome measure and that we would move it into whatever other committee or process place it was. That was my own take. So
let me just observe, I guess, that the funder for this project is CMS, and they, of course, have responsibility, or HHS and CMS, intensely interested in the outcome of these discussions. I just raise that because what we're talking about when CMS is in the room is Medicaid, CHIP, and a very large percentage of children with special health care needs, and also a very large percentage of children with very good health. So to the extent that these measures are going to make their way into use with those programs, Congress will be very interested in how well their investment is being expended. Meaning, therefore, that this discussion we're having about differentiating between outcomes measures and process measures is extremely important. And my own sense is that if the group around the table begins to frame up the issues in an appropriate way, that that will essentially be a teaching tool for the very policymakers who are making resources available to continue this project.
One other thing that I just wanted to mention with the CHIPR, Suzanne will be staffing that portion of the project, so I just wanted to let the committee know that. And I also noticed that Ellen has joined us. Did you want to just quickly introduce yourself and if you have any disclosures?
My name is Ellen Schwallenstocker. I'm Acting Vice President for Quality Advocacy and Measurement at the National Association of Children's Hospitals and Related Institutions, which is local, which is why I'm late, because I'm fighting with the D.C. traffic. And the only disclosures are, as an employee of NACRI, we do have data programs that do produce measures. We do not have any in this particular group.
Thank you. I wanted to just quickly go through our endorsement criteria. I know you've seen this plenty of times, but it's worth just refreshing and also review with you our options for recommending measures for endorsement. So, again, our criteria, we're going to be looking at importance, which is a must-pass criterion, and that's where a lot of the discussion will come up, is this an outcome, is this a process measure? So that will really happen in importance. If it is not important to measure and report, and if it is out of scope for this project, we do not continue with the rest of the evaluation. We next look at scientific acceptability and the measure properties, which covers a lot of the specifications of the measure, obviously. Usability, a lot of the discussions in terms of the level of analysis will probably come out and when we get to usability and also feasibility. The other thing I wanted to mention is when you're discussing the measures, it will be sort of a balance and trade-off in terms of identifying why you like or do not like the measure. So we encourage the committee members to really stick to this criterion and identify, if at all possible, within these four criterions, what specifically was it that propelled you to recommend it for endorsement or to not recommend it for endorsement. So, again, this goes to this four criterion again. the evaluation process, you have the measures and you've gone through most of this already. As I mentioned, if the measures, the measures have to pass importance to continue remaining in our process to be fully evaluated. And what we'll do is we will vote on each of those four main criteria and also receive a vote overall on the measure, whether you recommend it for endorsement or not. Here are the options. Obviously, recommend for endorsement, do not recommend, and also recommend with conditions. That is, should be used carefully. Recommending with conditions means that you have specific things that you'd like the measure developer or steward to change about the measure. So if it's a time frame that's unclear, if they need to clarify the time frame, if the specifications can be cleaned up a little bit, there are certain measures in which the committee can provide that recommendation. The conditions have to be clear, and we give the measure developer or steward about 2 weeks to do that. So your conditions shouldn't be something that would completely change the measure in any way. And they would follow up with their feedback and responses to those conditions. We then would bring that back to the committee, and you would review them and decide from there whether you want to recommend it for endorsement. The other thing that may arise is time-limited endorsement. This only applies to untested measures. And we do have a small handful of untested measures in our complete set. Recently, NQF has updated their time-limited endorsement policy, and there are three specific conditions that must be met in order for it to qualify for time-limited endorsement. There cannot be a currently NQF-endorsed measure that addresses the same topic of interest. A critical timeline must be met. Example includes a legislative mandate for this particular measure. And the measure cannot be complex. So a composite or any measure requiring risk adjustment would not apply. Also, there's a time period that the measure steward must agree with to complete the testing, and that's 12 months. Previously, it was 24 months. So I just wanted to make the group aware. And once we get to those measures where this could be a possibility, certainly we'll bring that to your attention and be able to answer any questions about that. Lastly, which we may revisit again, it's just our timeline. Again, after this meeting, we're scheduled to go out for public and member comment in June, member voting followed by that in August, September, and CSAC review and board endorsement in October of this year. So that's our tentative timeline, and just wanted to go through that quickly with the group. Were there any questions, or there may, questions may arise as we go through the measures?
I had a question. I heard the part earlier about the next phase of the project. Are you all anticipating there'll be another call for outcome measures later, or is it just the SHPRA?
Actually, what NQF is doing is revisiting with our board of directors today, actually, our approach for looking at measures, realizing that trying to reconcile what we have and new measures that need to come in is not well served with sort of the kind of project focus, whether it's an outcomes with this or that. So what we're hoping to move into is sort of a rolling, predictable, every couple of years there'll be a call for all measures around a certain topic area, for instance, child health. And it wouldn't be just outcomes, wouldn't just be process, it wouldn't just be hospital, it wouldn't just be, and so we could really look at that aspect of the portfolio in a more comprehensive way. So again, this is sort of an evolutionary thing. So answering your question isn't something we're able to do right now. We're hopeful that it will be something regular and predictable that will have a stream to be bringing in new measures, particularly when there's a big push for measure development to occur. Heidi, did you want to add anything to that?
I think we'll know when the board decides today. But the hope is to, again, have committees not look at this one-off piece, here's a few outcome measures that address one condition, really perhaps get our arms around what does care coordination mean across the board, not only looking at measures that are appropriate for nursing homes when you deal with falls, but also just falls in general across every setting. So the hope is to be able to really start looking at comprehensive care, process, outcome, structure, whatever, you know, we can get,
and again, build it into our measure development and endorsement agendas. That's the hope.
Okay. We are going to segue into briefly reviewing the committee's discussion and votes on the four ARC measures that were discussed via conference call. And in your packet of materials, you will find a folder in there. Actually, it's a PDF that has the meeting summary from our April 12th conference call, and further down, about page 5, we have compiled the results from the committee's vote on the four main criterion and also the vote on the recommendation for endorsement, along with several comments for each measure. Let me see if I can enlarge that. The name of the file is CH Vote Summary ARC Measures. So I have it projected here. And
you're on page 5?
Okay. 5 of 12.
Yeah, 5, yeah. So we wanted to take some time to really briefly discuss this again. I know based on the results we got so far, we had about 11 responses. Essentially, the first measure, which was on urinary tract infection admission rate, and the last, that measure and also the diabetes short-term complication rate, those two particular measures, so far the majority was do not recommend. So I wanted to just kind of get your thoughts about that, maybe revote because we only had 11 vote. We have about 17 on the steering committee. And touch base on those two measures first, and then we'll go through the other two, which were more likely to pass.
And have fewer votes.
And yes. So this first, the urinary tract infection admission rate, the description is just the admission rate for urinary tract infection in children ages 3 months to 17 years old. Again, this is a population level measure. It looks like most of the responses did agree that this was important to measure and report. But when we looked at scientific acceptability, usability, and feasibility, moderate was the rating overall for those, and 8 out of 11 that reviewed this measure requested not to recommend the measure. 2 recommended with conditions. The comments weren't too specific on what those conditions would be, so we can talk about that if that's something that we want to do. Also, I wanted to find out, do we have ARC on the phone?
Yeah, hi, this is John Bott with ARC.
Okay, great. Just wanted to make sure. Just wanted to open it from discussion with the group. If there are any follow-up comments about the measure, we can go right into voting on the criterion, but I wanted to kind of get your feedback and allow you to discuss any concerns you had first.
My recollection of the major concern was people were not convinced that there really was a preventability dimension to the UTI issue. Although it is routinely included in the ambulatory care sensitive conditions, which is where this comes from, I think my sense of the discussion was that we were not convinced, that many of us reviewing this were not convinced that ambulatory care prostitutes, that there was a clear link between ambulatory care prostitutes and this particular
condition.
I think the age range is the real concern.
Yes,
too many. So is there any need to revote, or
do you want to call a formal vote?
Why don't we call a formal vote then on this? But if there are no other questions or discussion of the measure.
Charlie, could I ask, in terms of your first comment, back to our discussion about processes and outcomes and whether or not all the pathways to the outcome need to be clear in order for the outcome to be important. If people are not, I just want to be sure I understand the ground rules. If people aren't, what you said is that the major discomfort was that people are not confident that the ambulatory care processes could prevent this outcome. Is that crucial to the vote, or is it really just, is this outcome important for child health? I'm struggling over the criteria for what this committee is about.
I think you need to look within the context of quality, because these are, we're looking to endorse measures that are performance measures, that are quality measures, so the outcome may have a whole variety of inputs, but there should be at least some reflection of the quality of those inputs, particularly around the provision of the care, and that's really the context we're looking at. So there are a lot of very important outcomes that may not reflect the quality of care provided. It may reflect the nature of the condition itself. So there is a difference between outcomes for which it's all about the condition as opposed to outcomes for which we see a lot of variation in care, variation in the results that implies something about how that care is delivered and sort of the large quality context behind it.
I think it's a tricky,
Can I clarify my question?
Okay.
In response to it. So I think I understand that when we're living in the scope of inpatient, outpatient care delivery, but when we chose the scope of this project as a group, we also included these population-based measures, which have been poverty and disparities and parents and IQ and education and SES and a lot of things that are not in any way part of the process of care for practitioners. And so that's where I'm confused. I understand your point when we're talking about inpatient care, outpatient care, ambulatory care, but not when we're in that other space. So, and this was presented as a population health measure, not as a ambulatory care quality measure.
I think your point's well taken. I don't think we're going to be able to come up with a bright line. I guess the way I think of it is if you're looking at something like school days missed, which is sort of an integrative measure of a whole variety of things, including but not limited to healthcare, I'm personally more willing to sort of allow that kind of broad framing. When you come up with really something that still sounds like a clinical measure, admission for UTI.
Got it.
That's my take on it. I'm not saying that, but that's how I kind of am differentiating these. But I think the other point that you've raised, though, that there are other technical reasons, like the broad age group, which my wife being a judge reminds me that sometimes if you can make decisions on a narrow point, you don't go to the broad point. I don't know if we use those same policies, but in this case, there's a narrow technical concern about this, which maybe we don't have to make the decision based on the broader one.
Charlie, let me just follow up one thing. In terms of population health measures,
this actually is a relatively new area that we're trying to address. Population health is one of the national priorities that was established. We talked a bit about it in our November meeting when Dr. Bonnie Zell, who heads our population health efforts, talked about that. It is slightly different, and we're actually learning, and you're helping us learn how we are going to address some of these things. NQF has previously endorsed some population-based measures, primarily the purpose of which was to provide context for the environment in which healthcare is being delivered. That was in our disparity-sensitive project. So I think that the issues you're bringing up are helping us learn the best approach to look at population measures, but there certainly is an audience and a demand for looking at it that way. Also, I think that there is a sense that whatever happens at the individual patient-clinician interface rolled up to whatever larger provider group, those can be rolled up to what's going on in your local community and rolled up
that would be the ultimate ideal way of being able to look at different levels of analysis and potentially inputs and potentially actions at various levels.
When I looked at this measure, I said, gee, it's interesting to know, but I'm trying to, and as I looked at these other measures, especially the more specific ones such as this, I tried to look at what conclusions can be drawn that would lead to quality improvements. Sure. And the implication of this measure is that lower is better, and for making decisions for the individual child, lower may not be better. So I think it is so broad that the measure itself doesn't really add anything to our ability to improve quality.
Early?
Yes.
Ms. Carling, I would just add my two cents. I think one of the hesitations I have on any area type level measure is that, you know, experience has shown us that although measures get specified for one thing, since once they're approved in whatever group it is, there's no stewardship, if you will, of maintaining that. And so they have tended to then be rolled down despite the fact, so for example, if measures say this is not to be held accountable at the institutional level, they get rolled down because there's no one that sort of stewards, controls, if you will, how entities use these measures. So even though it's an area level measure, it always raises concerns that someone may start applying it at a health plan level regardless, and that, you know, those kind of things have happened.
Can I add to what she was saying? Is I agree wholeheartedly, and one of also the fact is that because this implies it's lower is better, if people apply it that way, we may have an effect on quality that is decreasing it rather than increasing it. And so it's an unintended consequence, but that's exactly what would happen because it would apply it across the board. And if you did it for younger children, it would be worse, and I'm just assuming, and for older children, you know. So that's why I think the measure, you know, isn't a good one for what we want to do.
And just to add, along that same point, I think the measure could be acceptable and improved if it was just a narrow age group and specific levels of severity. I mean, obviously, for some kids, admission is appropriate, and if they developed their measure around that criterion, it would have been acceptable.
Lee, did you also?
Lee, did you have some?
I think that Dr. Rao pretty much said what I was going to say. If this had been focused on teens, for example, I would have had a very different reaction to it.
So I think just in the interest of keeping this moving forward, why don't we have a vote on the measure as is, and then we can make recommendations to the steward if they choose to, that our suggestion, whether we want it, we can suggest to the steward that they modify the measure and we'd be happy to see it again in the future, et cetera. So why don't I call for a vote on it as is? So why don't we start with the negative, those who are opposed to endorsement of this measure?
Charlie, my hand is raised if you're raising hands.
How do we know that?
12, 13. 14 is Marlene.
Is that it?
Any in favor?
Let's
recommend with conditions.
Okay. I'm recommending.
Good. Did you vote on the first go-in?
And were there any abstentions? So, Kathy, do you want to tell us the conditions?
The conditions are that the measure be limited to population measurement only and the age and gender stratified.
Comments specific to the age and gender stratification?
Yes.
Well, the measure is adjusted based on age and gender, and stratification is possible at a number of levels, such as age and gender and in the software.
Okay.
My understanding is the way the measure was put forward was rolled up, but it was commented that it could be agent gender stratified, so that was the purpose of my comment, was that it should only be presented age and gender stratified and not rolled up.
Like it's a moot issue.
Absolutely.
My issue.
No, I think that reflects actually the sense of the committee is that how it should be done.
I guess the question is, if they were to make those changes, as Kathy suggested, would that change the votes of the other members of the committee from no to yes? Doesn't quite happen.
Yes, no?
I'd want to see the age stratification.
Okay. Yeah, this is Marlene. I'd want to see some data then on what that shows and the validity of it. You know, if you're changing a definition significantly, you can't just approve it and assume it still would work right the same way.
Okay. So we will move on. I want to go to measure 56. This is the diabetes short-term complication rate. Again, this was another measure where most of the members who reviewed and responded to this survey voted not to recommend this for endorsement. Short description is just the admission rate for diabetes short-term complications in children ages 6 to 17 at per 100,000 population. Comments?
I just have one comment. The discussion on page 3 of this measure about the deliberations on the phone suggests that a committee member recommended adding first-time admission for diabetes. Actually, I was that committee member, and I recommended excluding first-time admissions for diabetes, and I believe Mr. Bott then said that's really not possible because the coding does not mm-hmm. separate those two. So I just wanted to clear that up.
That's a question for Art. Yeah, the code doesn't allow for that, and the measures that ARC develops at the present time anyways use the admissions at a point in time, and we're not yet taking advantage of linked data sets where we could perhaps link to a previous admission and factor that into the denominator or exclusions, but the world could change in the future, but that's presently the data that we're constrained to.
So are there any further discussions of this measure, and we can just call for a vote? So why don't we get
comments? I guess the comment I would make is, once again, at the population-based level, the assumption behind the assumption would be that the rate of type 1 diabetes is relatively stable across population and across regions. That problem with the validity of the measure, although real, may not actually be influential in understanding variation. I assume that's what the measure developer was thinking in terms of that issue.
So following on that thought, if the prevalence of the disease and prevalence of new cases, incidence of new cases is the same across population, then in fact variation in hospitalization rate could in fact be a reflection of care in the community, because if the policies in general are to hospitalize, for example, first new diagnoses, then that should be stable across jurisdictions.
And I would just add that that's a general principle for risk adjustment models, where you're not always able to adjust for every important confounder. If an important confounder is relatively stable across and your unit of measurement is large enough, that you could actually retain validity without needing to adjust for that unmeasurable confounder. And I see this as a general issue as opposed to a specific issue.
Is it the place of NQF to recommend to the folks that are doing ICD-10
that they make two different codes, one for a first-time admission and one for a subsequent admission for diabetes, because that would be very helpful to us in the long run.
I would let the people from NQF.
We can certainly include that as a recommendation. Getting that to the appropriate audience might be challenging, but we can give it a try.
Thank you. So why don't we call for a vote then on this measure? So again, this is the measure of admission rate for diabetes in children aged 6 to 17 per 100,000. So it's reported only as a population measure. That's what it's specified as. So all those, we'll stay with the negative, all those who recommend not endorsing.
My hand is up, Charlie.
Okay. 11.
All those in favor?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Are there any abstentions? Did we catch up, everybody? Okay.
All right, and now let's go back. Let's go back. Let's go back to the
end. So we're going back to measure 55. This is measure gastroenteritis admission rate. Again, the age group is 3 months to 17 years. And based on the committee members who reviewed this measure and provided their votes, 6 recommended it for endorsement, 2 did not, and there were 2 that recommended it with conditions. So this was more favorable, but can open it up for more comments.
So my only concern with this measure, and I like it better than the other two, but would be what Marlene raised earlier, which is the potential for misuse. So if I could be assured that it was just going to be used at the population level, I would feel comfortable with it. But it seems to be a slippery slope out there that sometimes measures intended for one thing get used for another, and my only worry is on unintended consequences, i.e. keeping kids out of the emergency room when that may be the only place they can get care.
This is one where I think there is a place where the measure can be useful in spurring QI activities, because among the reasons for admission are inadequate use of oral rehydration, not having short-term holding areas. And I think if this did trickle down to the health plan or hospital level or even provider level, that perhaps it would induce some change in behavior. That would be a positive effect. So on that basis, I think that this is a useful measure.
Charlie?
Go ahead, Marlene.
This is Marlene. I at least I'd say in my own experiences, as I work in an acute care clinic, I've seen the exact opposite, where it would not be good if it trickled down, in that oftentimes part of the admissions for this are very complicated with psychosocial issues and parent limitations and fragmented care and lack of consistent caregivers. And in that case, it's the right thing from a QI purpose for the hospital to admit that patient for the gastroenteritis, which comes up a lot. My population, you know, is predominantly 85%, if not more, Medicaid. So I at least in my own experience, I'll say that it is oftentimes the right thing for the hospital to actually admit a patient with gastroenteritis because of complicating social circumstances that has failed outpatient care.
Gotcha.
I would just point out that at the population level, that it's still potentially preventable. So this is a general concept that we've been discussing in all of these places.
However, you know, I would say right back when you say that the population level, the interventions at hand, if this gets rolled down to institution level, for me to impact the psychosocial environment, are just not there. That goes right back to my beginning point when we say if we're going to endorse measures, I'd like that all the measures have a toolkit that you could hand folks. No one likes to perform bad. If people want, if they're going to have them fish, give them the tools so that they know what to do with it.
But in this case, there actually are, I mean, there are, actually is a toolkit. Now, again, part of the toolkit needs to be broader. In other words, there are toolkits for oral rehydration and management thereof, you know, AAP guidelines, et cetera, around that. I think the solutions we're talking about for this would be also broader, like some of the community transformation activities that are written up in health reform. But I think at least it's within the range of content that one can reduce at a community level hospitalization for gastroenteritis. You're right. It would be unfortunate. You wouldn't want the adverse. You wouldn't want a clinician at the front line dealing with an individual patient that they're concerned about to have pressure put on them from hospital administration, for example, that the hospital would be dinged if they make the right decision and admit a patient. And that's what I hear from your concern, which, you know, is a reasonable unintended concern. But at the population level, if you were comparing, you know, inner-city Baltimore to inner-city Harlem, you know, you would want to be able to compare hospitals, you know, and again, I tried to pick communities that would be of comparable demographic status, you'd want to be able to compare how effective one community was compared to another in their ability to prevent something like this.
I totally agree, Charlie. The problem is always that once it's approved and out there, there's no stewardship of how it's applied. And we may, if this ends up getting rolled down to a health plan institutional level, we may actually have negative consequences on quality of care.
Stepping back just a minute, I'm wondering if what this is leading us to is a discussion about presentation and maybe putting a tagline or a footnote or some sort of statement together with these population measures that makes it abundantly clear that we intend for them to be used in that way and in that way only.
That's certainly a very feasible thing to do when we write the report, put it in a separate section of its own, label population measures, and describe the reasons for which they are approved. That we can make that abundantly clear in terms of the presentation and as a reflection of what your recommendation is and limited to.
2 points. Number one, there is an upstream preventive measure that would also reduce hospitalizations, and that is the use of rotavirus vaccine and how well that's being. Then the other point, though, that I think people may be alluding to, but I want to make sure I understand it correctly, is there a concern that a health insurance company would say, hey, NQF has said children with vomiting and diarrhea should not be admitted to the hospital, therefore we will deny this admission?
Yes.
Is that sort of where we lose control? Where,
yes, that's a great example.
Insurance kind of been known to do that.
Mm-hmm. But we're not going to solve everything here at this committee. I think that the idea, though, that and I had asked this on the phone, Charlie, was my specific question to you about these measures, was if they were being proposed as population-based measures, would the endorsement be limited to the use as a population-based measure? Because I can think of 1,000 confounders and problems if they get down to 2 small buckets of patients. This is only one. So
yes, the endorsement can be limited to them as population-based measures only, certainly. I mean, we've had other measures that are appropriate only at certain levels of analysis, and that's what the endorsement is limited to.
So then would that be a recommend with conditions, or is that just, okay.
These are specified as population-level measures, so all you're saying is yes, and that's how they should be used, and that's the limit of our recommendation.
So one last comment, because I'm
conscious of the time and have much we have to do over the next 2 days. So go ahead, Lisa.
I don't want to prolong this discussion, but I did notice the comments in the materials you sent out talked a fair bit about the rotavirus, and I don't know that issue. I'm just wondering if it's worth exploring for half a minute more of what its impact is and how it's mixed in here. Is there a separate measure out there of the use of rotavirus? I don't.
There isn't a separate measure that we know of. The literature shows is that since the inception of the virus, now I think at least 2 full years, that admission for rotavirus gastroenteritis in toddlers in particular has precipitously dropped, and that is the expected effect of the vaccine.
So presumably this is one case in which we might want to have some recommendations of the committee down the line.
Actually, the rotavirus is included in the childhood immunization NQF measure. I mean, NCQA measure that's NQF endorsed. So it is already, it has been included since the vaccine has become available. So it is already included in our childhood immunization measure.
Could I make one last comment, just addressing Tom's point there about an insurance company using this measure inappropriately? I mean, do we need a statement that says, for example, these measures are not intended to be used as a clinical practice guideline or as a clinical algorithm, or is there enough in the description of the measures to counteract that?
Well, you're not talking about something that's specific to these measures, but is something that's ubiquitous around performance measures in general. And for the most part, usual the discussions are talking about that the targets for any of these measures are never zero or 100, whichever, however the measure is crafted, is such that there is an acceptable level. What we're looking for is minimizing variation, minimizing extreme outliers, and trying to bring everybody to whatever that acceptable, appropriate level is. And so it's not a black or white, all or none thing. And that tends to be the discussion that pervades all of performance measurement.
Phil, did you have a comment?
So why don't we vote on this measure? I'll follow the same process just so people don't get confused.
So we'll start with the negative, that is, all those opposed to the endorsement of this measure, signify by raising your hand or saying something on the phone.
Something on the phone? So Marlene, yours is a no?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anyone else? No.
All right. So that's a one.
Okay. All those in favor of the measure?
One, two, three, four. Okay.
Any no abstentions?
Moving on, the last measure in this set is the asthma admission rate measure. Again, the response to this was favorable for endorsement. This is the asthma admission rate for children ages 2 to 17. And open up for comments.
Any comments on this measure, or feel like we covered the general discussion pretty well with the gastroenteritis training? Any of the same concerns? Well, seeing no discussion. Ellen?
I'm sorry. The measure harmonization issue, can somebody recall what that issue is?
H2. Yeah, most of the measures that offer asthma begin at age 5 rather than at age 2.
Is there any way to address that, or are we stuck with what we have?
Let's ask John Bott from ARC. Why was H2 chosen for this particular measure when typically measures of asthma begin around age 5?
Unfortunately, I'm not a clinician to be able to really address that. That would be a Patrick Romano sort of question, and we didn't think there would be much discussion today, so I suggested to Patrick he wouldn't need to participate today, so I'm sorry I can't personally answer that question.
Okay.
I would imagine the issue, Charlie, I assume you're going to say this, is that there is sort of a conventional wisdom that you can't diagnose asthma before age two. That line is often drawn, and I would imagine the people who came down on the five-year age range said, wow, there's some wiggle room between two and five, so let's cut it clean at age five. And you're just seeing both sides of that in the older measures versus this measure.
Or somebody got a two mixed up with a five.
So I think the clinical... I think in favor of it, starting at the younger age, and hospitalization for asthma is, you know, very high at younger ages and decreases as you get older. Okay. So if you're trying to capture the largest number of hospitalizations, you don't want to miss the 2 to 5 year old slot. On the other hand, the clarity of the evidence about the efficacy of, for example, anti-inflammatories, the older, once you hit the age 5 and up, you're clearer you're dealing with the inflammatory disease, you're less confused with some of the other, with small airways, et cetera. So I think, you know, there's an intersection here between crispness of diagnosis and efficacy of therapy with the older kids and certainly switches in the younger kids. That's my guess is why they ended up including the 2 to 5 year olds in this and not in the more clinically driven measures.
One of the reasons that the NHLBI and most asthma guidelines start at age 5, one of the reasons is that's about the earliest that you can do pulmonary function testing, which allergists really believe in. Whether they need to assure or not, I don't know. The other thing is I think that under age 5, you're opening yourself up to huge coding errors as to what was the real reason for admission. So any child who wheezes under age 5 might be diagnosed as asthma, whereas asthma is wheezing is a secondary finding due to another pulmonary problem under age 5. So I think it's much, even though it excludes a large group of children, the convention of over age 5 I still think should be used.
I would just point out that this is, again, very similar to the type 1 diabetes issue. I said before, when you're in the population-based arena across large boxes of patients, that essentially misclassification bias, which I'm not sure you're alluding to on the 2 to 5 year olds, if that was equivalent across the country, for example, or large geographic regions, then the variation, you could still understand variation despite that limitation, that real measurement limitation that's what you're alluding to.
I don't think it's. I don't think that anybody has shown that it's consistent across the geographic country or in the healthcare system. I think that academic centers may code one way and the community hospital another way.
Population measure, not a center, but that's not.
It's a population measure derived from discharge, hospital discharge data. That's where you get.
Could we ask ARC what they consider to be the geographic unit of a population for the purposes of this measure? Is it a state? Is it a region?
I assume it's
not an institution.
No, of course it's not an institution. It's typically a state, county. Some analysis are with MSAs. So those seem to be the appropriate levels, or of course with the National Healthcare Quality Report, the nation as well.
Okay, I think it's been another excellent discussion, as they all have been. Why don't we move forward with the vote? So all those, again, opposed to endorsing the asthma measure as a population measure, all those opposed?
No. Marlene?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. I oppose.
Okay, so 4 no's.
All those in favor of approving.
Ten yeses.
And 4. Any abstentions?
I'm not abstaining, but I would recommend with condition that the age issue be looked at.
That's the concern I have, too.
So from a process perspective, we, the committee at this point, is recommending that it go forward for endorsement. The notes are always reflected when that goes forward, so that both people will see the vote, and they will also see the concerns that were raised, including the recommendation. Okay. Well, congratulations.
We did four.
We did four. We closed it. The first are always the hardest.
They are.
Nicole, should we move into the clinical measures or take a break?
Does anyone feel like they need a break? Or?
I propose a 5-minute break.
Okay.
Take a 5-minute break.
Well, so I'm going to be
Ellen. How are you?
Again, yes, thank you very much.
Thank you for all your input.
I try.
Finding people.
Yeah, I try. So it's been a good opportunity for us. Sounds like our measures are going to all be turned down, but...
Is that right? I was just trying to find the cereal.
Yeah, well, the sort of changed since we submitted.
With regard to the time limit. So that was one thing I was unclear about is the critical time limit. I don't know what that means.
I don't know, but this is good experience in a way because we plan on continuing to play. And I guess we shouldn't, hi Bill, I guess we shouldn't feel bad if two out of four of ARCs didn't get approved.
Wow. Yeah, it could be a couple times to meet with you.
I hear so much about you.
I've gotten them.
The community transformation activities that are written up.
Why don't you send us a big table? It's not like Thanksgiving here.
Well, I didn't know if public, if you had to be, if not being a member. The chair is uncomfortable and I'm lagging. I'm having laptop.
Why? Why? Oh, I got another. We've got another one on June 29th. It's not going to be a
good spot.
Yes.
It is what it is.
Uh-huh.
I have a full metric.
Dr. Hubbard.
Yeah.
You talk to
me later. It was good. You don't feel like a great deal with it. And he
was. Well, what we, the way we'd probably write it is.
I don't know why.
That's concerning that the measures would be used at a lower level.
It's really problematic.
And whatever the name is.
We'd always reflect the concern. I mean, the measure is.
I understand. As the
outpatient.
Right. It's a pulmonary embolism.
Yeah. We don't do that, but we do indicate what level it's at.
Are you not going to do that? Phil and I are from qualitative versus what level of an analysis. Always on the phone. How is it? But I was just telling them. Because
that wouldn't be the first of all, as an answer. I think it would. Yeah.
And always overlapping.
It's always overlapping. They have a way of making their meeting in
Japanese. Well, Kathy was supposed to present.
We would say no. No. Yeah. Yeah. So we may not just Kathy was call it out, but if someone asked us or left, it became apparent that
it had to come down here. So.
I think, yeah.
Moving from micro PE, it's only been a month.
Right. Well, and I think there's been a...
And from the big plan, so yeah. Well, right. When I was 22.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we're finding that people's awareness of all the details that go under it, behind all of it, you know, people didn't ask for it. But it's so important now, I think, we're finding how do we present it on the website, because it's
really
oh, yeah.
Okay.
So we just have to figure out, and that's in the process we're doing it, how do we make it as transparent and easy to understand on the website, but at least they can perhaps and I want all the population level analysis measures. Nothing but, you know, there you go. Who gets to be blue and green? Yeah, that'll be fun.
Red and blue.
Red and blue, there we go.
5 minutes always matters.
Oh, of course.
I like it. Okay. All done.
Okay.
No. We need a thing. Oh, yeah. No. That's, no.
Well, that's what I think what we're trying to do at the school is put structure
yeah, okay.
Then measure
I live
measures
up in the Seattle area.
Very nice to meet you. I'm Heidi. Sure.
Welcome. Okay.
Is there anyone from CAMI on the line?
something else.
Arlene, are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Any other measure developers on the line? We'll just go ahead and get started with that. This first group of measures. Again, this is group two. So we're starting with measure 34. The reviewers were Bonnie Zima, Jane Perkins, Nancy Fisher, and Ellen Schwanzacker. And just as a separate note, this first measure that we're looking at, Measure 34, the National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs Quality Measures, within that particular larger survey, there are smaller measures that are comprised of the larger survey measure. Two of those were also submitted individually, and those were 35 and 37. So just so you know, as we're reviewing them, when we get to those 35 and 37, those measures are actually a component of that larger survey measure. Projected on the screen is feedback from the reviewers, their ratings of the sub-criteria, and also any comments or concerns that were raised while they were reviewing this particular measure. And this information is also on your thumb drive. Let me just quickly read a description of the measure just to introduce it a little bit. This is the National Survey of Children with Special Health Needs. It's a population-based survey designed to assess how well the nation and each state meet the Maternal and Child Health Bureau's strategic plan goals and the national performance measures specifically for children with special health care needs. The questions address a variety of physical, emotional, and behavioral health indicators and measures of children's health experience with the healthcare system, and 10 of these measures are directly focused on children's healthcare quality. Do we have any of the assigned reviewers who want to take a first stab at kind of reviewing their initial evaluation of the measure?
Thank you.
I have not had a chance to sort of synthesize the comments, so these are just sort of my perceptions. But I really had trouble with this one because I was trying to figure out how to evaluate the overall instrument it seemed to me, and I honestly haven't gotten to look at the details for the subgroups 3 and 4, it seemed to me throughout a number of individual measures were pulled out of this, so I had trouble, you know, sort of figuring out what kind of context to put this in. But I did have a couple of bigger concerns with the survey itself. One is I would really like to know more about what we know about the response rate and potential for response bias, because it is probably one of the longest surveys I've ever seen, and a number of quite sensitive questions. So I wondered about the dropout rate, and then I also wondered about how accurately we know that the family member can respond to these questions, like how many hours did you spend caring for your child over an X time period? So that difficulty trying to figure out how to assess the questionnaire overall, and found myself wanting a lot more information over, just what we know about response rate and accuracy of reports.
You made me feel so much better. I agree with her that I thought the survey was quite long and wondered if somebody was even using it, but you could get enough people to participate. But I felt that the survey was not what was needed here. What we needed was specific measures. This is a good way to, if you're using a survey to gather information, and then after you gather the information, because of the information you have in the survey, you may put out some measures you want from your analysis of the survey. So I didn't think that that really fit in with what we were doing.
Is it being put forward as a population-based measure, or what's the unit of analysis?
Charlie, if I can add one more thing. I mean, it looks to me like it is pretty widely used. So I guess I would want more information about how it has been used and how useful it is, and I just couldn't assess that from the materials themselves.
So I'm concerned that Christy Bethel, the developer, isn't on the phone, because this is extremely widely used. It is, for example, what every state, and again, at the population health level, for the state Title V programs, this is how they are assessed. They are assessed on what proportion of children have a medical home, what proportion of children have access to health insurance, what proportion, you know, how satisfied are parents with the services that they receive. Those are all derived from this measure.
Let me add that this survey is an outgrowth of legislation that was enacted in the late 1980s that imposed upon Title V programs for the first time a requirement that they obtain information on patient care that is delivered through their program. And the way it's structured is that there are a series of data elements that they look at, and states have certain items to which they must respond and others that are available to them on a voluntary basis. So it is widely used. The data is being collected. How well or, you know, how consistently across the country is open to question. But the data is there, and there is legislation that lies behind that requires it at this point. Now, it may be, this is an old instrument and an old directive, and it may be that this is one of the areas that we should point to for HHS to take a fresh look.
You know, but going along with what you said, and it's being used, then to me, and you said, like you said, there's certain things you have to answer and you have to do. What I'm saying is you have this instrument that's being used, so you look at it and you say, okay, and you look across the country and you see that children with special health care needs, they don't have a medical home, okay? Then to me, then you put a measure so you find out what's going on with the kids, why don't they have a home? And so, to me, it's gathering a lot of information, but in itself, it's got a lot of measures in it, and it's just too big, too broad, but it's something that I think that we can use because we have information. To me, it's information for gaps or what you want to make improvement on and what you want to then go down and be specific and hone in on. So that's why I said I didn't think it fit in with what we were doing, and they did submit the other measures, see, and that makes sense to me.
I had the question is, because this applies to group three also that I was on, is why did they submit the whole survey as a measure and then pick out a couple of the questions also as measures? It would appear to me that each of these questions should be evaluated on their own merits, because some of them may be valid for quality measures, whereas others may have problems that would make them not acceptable. So I don't know if we have the option of separating them all out or just take the two that they chose to separate out. Kathy?
Alan, I agree in terms of this being exactly the issue in one of the measures in group three. But I don't think it's the whole survey. I think that they've chosen 15 individual items which they regard as the quality measures on the entire survey, They are, though, to your point, proposing all 15 as a group. And when I tried to do that on the other survey, I had the exact same issue where I had to, I couldn't really consider them as a group because my answer depended very much on which of the 15 or however many it was in the other survey we were referring to.
So let me ask NQF staff how, I mean, another survey which is broadly endorsed by NQF is the CAP survey. The same concept, though, is that really what you do in the CAP survey is not CAPs, but you use a variety of domains and domain scores and things like that. But if I understand correctly, CAPs itself is endorsed rather than the specific domains and reports that come out of it. Go ahead. Tell us how that was handled, because I would think this is a pretty similar kind of issue.
Yes. The problem with what you're saying, Charlie, is the two don't separate very readily because the instrument is the tool, the data gathering tool. And you can't use an alternate tool to create the summary results of the CAPS survey, and there are several of them. So that's the measure is actually those results that are reported, but the tool is a, you know, inextricable part of the measure in how to collect the data to create those summary results that are the things that are posted and published and all of that. So similarly, I think you can look at these as you have a tool versus you have the information that you would report about whatever as more the measures. But the two have to be related because it's not as if you can use another instrument or some alternative data collection method to get the information to create those measures.
Is the idea to endorse a tool so that everything is consistent? So that somebody else doesn't come up with another tool?
Right. I think that heretofore what NQF has done is endorsed tools sort of as part of measures that are well-defined because we want standard measures that can be used to allow the comparability. When it comes to survey tools, you pretty much end up endorsing the tool, but not that isn't our primary focus, to endorse the tool. It's to endorse the measures that are derived from that data collection methodology.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, I feel like I sort of screwed up because I should have looked at each one of the individual measures.
The question I would ask on this one is, using the entire or the tool as presented here with the multiple parts, is there a summary result that comes from it that is the measure? What would you publicly report from this?
Well, I think that's what they've tried to do. They did it in two ways. For certain individual components, they created what they're considering to be a summary, and in this case, they have to say outcome measure. The one that we're working on here, though, there is no summary measure, and it does appear that there's 15, some of which on this instrument and the other one I regard as structure or process, and some I regard as outcomes, and some probably could be either. So we have that additional problem.
No, that actually was another point of confusion for me in that they talk about 15, but then listed are actually 22 measures. So I wasn't sure. I just wasn't sure how to assess this tool.
It was
personally to take the position that we cannot endorse all 15 or 22 or however many it is for group 3 all as one, that we can only endorse them at the individual level. That's my personal recommendation.
I was going to say the same thing, that we would have to take them, in another session or something, divide them up and look at them and endorse certain ones for the survey if that's what they want.
These have been submitted to us as those individual measures, however many there are, and as well as the tool. And it is unfortunate. Are we expecting Christy so she can answer the question of why the tools also submitted as well as the measures derived from it? I think that's an important issue to resolve.
Were all of the 22 measures have been submitted?
No, I don't think so.
No.
The poll isn't submitted. It's only for, if you look at the numerator, that's where you can figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'm looking on the numerator 2A21, I think. Top, or, well, that's the algorithm. Numerator is comprised. That's where you can figure out what their measures are.
Gotcha.
And to me, it looks like a group of measures. It doesn't look. It
looks like it's a different population of the 22 go to all children who are served by Title V, whereas the children with special health care needs a subset of the population from there. That's where the 15 is.
That's true in the other survey, but this is the special health care needs survey.
National survey, and then it's this.
The other one, there is that issue where it's stratified by special health care needs versus not.
Right. 33 goes to the issue of all 22.
Yes.
30. Is that in group 3?
No, it's in group 2. 33.
It's in group
22.
Or 34 goes to
that. No, 33 is group 3.
Well,
yeah, this only has 15.
We need Christy.
Yeah,
I think the short answer is we need Christy. I mean, these are 15 more or less performance measures for children with special health care needs based on items from the National Survey of Parent Child Health. So there's no way to calculate these without the National Survey. But I think what I'm hearing from the group is, A, a desire to have more information on the psychometric properties of the instruments, so response rates, et cetera, which I suspect will be readily available. And then the second is people really want to know more specifics about each of these items. Each of these, some of these measures are from single items. Most of them are actually composites from several items together, and that's what you'd like to know.
There's also kind of a prematurity to thinking about this as an indicator of quality, I think. Maybe this is something to put on GAP. There's also a heterogeneity around CSHCN definition. And so we sort of, you have sort of heterogeneity in the numerator, whether it's type of service, unmet need, or need for service. And then you have this heterogeneous group. And I'd like to propose that, you know, as we think about future steps, you know, perhaps we need to be also teasing out what this CSHCN group really is.
And I guess I would contend that we could certainly discuss that. I would contend that this measure reflects 15 years of discussion and basically consensus within the maternal child health community around what comprises children with special health care needs. And this measure, the screener, was really designed to reflect that consensus definition. So
it is.
NQF to sort of deconstruct that would be.
I agree with you that there's some heterogeneity around it, but it has been defined for the people that are going out and they're looking at this for, like, your Medicaid population and stuff, as the person who's done that. So it's been defined. They have a special thing for, especially the people that audit the Medicaid programs, and for the Balanced Budget Act that was passed, they have specific things that they put into a group. But it's still sort of a heterogeneous group, but it's defined that way. So.
But you're quite right, Bonnie. It is a very broad definition.
I think it's something to put on our future steps.
I saw that issue with affecting the actionability of the findings.
What I'm hearing from everybody is this measure actually is you can call it anything you want, a compound measure, so that a result from it would give you 15 separate reports out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But as a single measure, all 15 would be required, and so that would be the output. It's not a composite measure because those 15 aren't in some way summed up or
aggregated for a single. So I don't know what you call it, but it has these multiple, it's a multi-part measure for sure. And I think the question for the committee is starting to address the issues that Kathy and Ellen and Nancy have brought up is,
since you would be obligated to include all of these parts if we were to endorse this measure, is that what you would want to do? Do you have concerns about certain parts of it versus others? Realizing that there are other measures that are more single that they have also submitted using the same tool.
As I look at these 15 measures, I think all except perhaps the last one are really process measures. And it's only the last one that says unmet health care needs. That's an outcome measure in my mind. The rest are all, you know, do you have insurance? Do you have a physician? Do you get family-centered care? But those aren't really outcomes.
I would beg to differ, or at least suggest that they could be viewed either way. Just like one could say, for example, hospitalization for asthma is a process, really. It's not an outcome. Mm-hmm. That is, you're doing something to a patient. Having a medical home can be viewed as an outcome. Having a family, having effective care coordination can be viewed. I mean, those things we included in our solicitation, health processes as potential outcomes. So I think these are on the border. These are, again, and we can challenge this, the Maternal Child Health Bureau's Division of Children with Special Health Care Needs has 6 aims that they have articulated through a public process for children with special health care needs. That is, that all children should have insurance, all kids with special health care needs should have insurance, that they should have a medical home, that care be accessible, et cetera, that should be able to, that care be culturally competent, and forgetting to, because of my lack of sleep. But basically, those the Maternal Child Health Bureau would consider, quote, outcomes. This group, if you want. I mean, we can call them processes, but I think these are on the fence between processes and outcomes.
I think especially for this population, that they are outcomes, they're important outcomes.
I guess I think I hate to disrupt the process, and because surveys, looks like survey measures are very substantial, I think we need the steward to actually have a fair conversation around this, and just wonder if we could move to some other, if we can sort of table some of this conversation until we can get Dr. Bissell on the phone and then come back to a broader discussion of these. Is the committee willing to do that and staff?
What do we
okay
know?
With that?
What do we know about her availability? Do you know?
Yes. She will call in. We are expecting, obviously, for her to call in. There's several staff members that are sort of staggering their time to call in to try and be here available for us. So we're trying to get in contact with them. We've emailed them, so hopefully they'll be calling in shortly. My suggestion was to move on to measure 43. The measure developer is here in person, but I just saw him step up for a second.
So what usually happens is we would have one of the reviewers, right, discuss it, and then
So what we're going to do, measure 43 is still a part of group 2. It's titled the Pediatric Symptom Checklist, and I'm going to quickly pull up the feedback from two of the reviewers who are able to provide us feedback on the sub-criteria for this measure. And this particular measure is description is a brief parent report questionnaire that is used to measure overall psychosocial functioning in children from ages 4 to 16 years of age. It looks like originally developed to allow pediatricians and other health professionals to identify children with poor overall functioning who are in need of further evaluation or referrals. In addition to the original 35-item parent report form, there are now other validated forms of translations, looks like, of this particular survey. I would like to just open it up to Michael Murphy, who's part of the measure development team, if he had any comments prior to the committee discussing the measure, or just, okay. So we'll open it up to the group for further discussion. Looks like, again, this is, looks like another survey questionnaire type of measure, so I think it might be worth kind of going through importance a little bit first. Looks like the committee is on the fence in terms of.
Can I ask Michael a question? If he could just explain why it's an outcome measure, I think that contextually that would be really helpful to us.
So I don't know the concept. I think this
concept is my.
There's a seat right up here.
I'm not sure how you're defining the term, so.
Well, it's the Child Health Outcomes Steering Committee, so I think it was, and we've been discussing a lot of issues around that definition, so I just wanted to hear your perspective about the checklist as an outcome measure.
So, again, I think in the context, it was initially designed as a screening test, so something that might indicate there was a problem. Now it's being proposed in a sense as an outcome measure, that is something that's really reflecting that there is a problem as opposed to there is an increased likelihood compared to baseline. So I think to put a finer point on it, why can you talk a little bit more about your level of confidence that an abnormal screen on one or more dimensions of the PSD actually is an outcome measure that would be important to track on a population basis or to indicate one population is more healthy or less healthy than another population?
You're speaking so well, I think I should just have you keep going. But, no, actually, it's a great question because it was designed as a screen, but because it's used so much, it's being used as an outcome measure. So, you know, we don't have any.
Do you have any evidence yet from the literature? I guess this goes really to the validity more than the importance here, but the validity that an abnormal screen is associated, and can you talk about the predictive value, positive, negative, sensitivity, specificity of. You know, or conceptually, so something along those lines that says your level of confidence. People are using it just because people are using it doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing to do. So, just talk a little more about the scientific basis for that.
Yeah. So go back and forth. I read some of the comments, I guess, from last night. Our confidence in it as a As you and I discussed on the break, it's being used in Massachusetts, and you know we have some data. One is a published study from Cambridge, 2009, relatively large population of about 1,000, and then we have data from the state of Massachusetts, which is you know, tens of thousands of cases that we've seen. So in terms of its validity as something that can pick up kids, one of the reviewers asked, "What's the evidence that positive screens lead to referrals?" And so now both in a sample of 1,000 in Cambridge and in the state of Massachusetts as a whole, we have data that shows that positive screens are referred. So in terms of the usefulness of it, I mean, that's sidestepping the issue of validity. So is that a good start, or do you want more on the positive predictive validity?
I guess the threshold, maybe we got out of it. The threshold question is important, and I actually do see that some of the reviewers had concerns about importance. That is, can you talk a little about, this should be a medium, from my perspective, this is a medium speed fastball right down the middle of the plate. You should be able to follow this one out there, but that's editorial judgment. Can you talk a little about what the evidence is that psychosocial issues are broadly defined significant problems in child health, and that this measure is, and that there's a gap between current practice and what is a desired practice. Because that, again, I'm seeing the scores on this are partially and minimally. That is, nobody felt that at least the report that was submitted clearly indicated that they were convinced that that this is a particular issue, psychosocial problems, and that current practice is inadequate to identify it.
So, you know, I thought I was surprised, and I talked to Mike Jelinek a little bit about it, you know, from our point of view. And we think from national standards point of view, psychosocial problems broadly defined are a hugely important issue. So it's an aspect of medical care for kids and for adults that is left out, has traditionally been left out, and there's tons of, you know, high-level legislation and committee recommendations that it be included as a part of routine health care. So the there's a large literature and a long-term literature that says psychosocial problems, broadly defined, are very important both for physical health and for life outcomes.
And that current practice.
And that current practice remains. You know, Tom McInerney's here. He was part of a study a decade ago that looked at Jane Costello's data from two decades earlier and Barbara Starfield's decade, evidence from three decades earlier that psychosocial problems are routinely under-identified and under-acted upon. So it's a continuing problem that legislation has sought to address, and the PSC is a well-validated way to identify the problems, and now we seek to actually get more referrals. And some of the questions you were asking before about sensitivity and specificity and predictive validity, the data is very strong. I think that when a kid screens positive with a PSC, they have a psychosocial problem of some sort. And we've actually done some work over the past decade to drill down in terms of which types of problems are, you know, the subscales show which types of problems.
I have a question. Is there any correlation between the checklist and school readiness? Is there any information on that?
In terms of tests, the academic standardized test scores?
Yes. Predicting bad or poor performance if you have a positive screen and no intervention?
Yeah, we actually have, the country of Chile has implemented this on a national scale, so we're getting tens of thousands of cases from them, and their educational system is very much like the U.S. system, so they have standardized academic test scores in the fourth grade, and they test the kids in the first grade, and the scores are highly predictive, so we're working on a couple papers to show that a negative screen in the first grade predicts a poorer test performance in fourth grade.
Not to be hard-nosed, but do you actually have numbers you could share? So typically on other committees I've been on, people would submit manuscripts and press and things like that, so we could actually...
We have a manuscript that has been making the rounds of journals being rejected, but I can send you a couple different versions, but basically it talks about the association between the PSC score and the standardized test score, so I could email that to members of the committee. I'm quite ready for prime time, but it's readable, rejectable.
Charlie, can I play putting myself in a user role here? I think I understand what happened in Massachusetts, but I want you to confirm that this was obviously designed as a screening tool so that it would help the pediatrician or the clinic or whoever pick up the fact that this is a child who seems to have some trouble. And what you've discovered by widespread use in Massachusetts, that in fact, if I were Judy Bigby, who's the commissioner of public health in Massachusetts, saw that there were a lot of these positives. Somehow you've been aggregating them so that the information is trickling up from the practice or the clinic. I have a problem in my community or in my state. And over time, as I see the referral rate tracking up, it looks like that problem has been eased. Is that how you're proposing we would think of this for an outcome measure?
I think that's a great summary of the leap to, you know, system use. Heretofore, it's been used, again, in the study that Tom was part of. It was, you know, our mental health problems increasing in the United States, so it was used as part of the national study. You know, regional differences, is pediatrician experience a factor? So exactly those ways. So it's certainly been used on a smaller scale way, and now it's being used on a population-based way to do the things you say. And, you know, I haven't spoken about the outcome measure issue. So we are using it at Mass General as a pre, post, quarterly assessment. And so, you know, we finally got it into our own system, and it works.
Nice.
Yeah.
When you say it works, can you tell me a little more? Like,
try not to get in too much trouble here. Let me talk about Bradstein in Los Angeles first.
Okay.
So it's been used in a number of studies as a pre-post measure of a PT, you know, children who are witnesses of domestic violence, and they have a PTSD prevention curriculum in the Los Angeles public schools, and they pre-test them with the PSC, and they post-test them, and they use that as a pre-post measure. So it's certainly been used in a half a dozen studies as a pre-post measure in small samples. At Mass General, we're just using it as, it's actually in the flow sheets, other aspects of the flow sheets. We have blood pressure and height and weight, and we have a psychosocial area now in the flow sheets of the electronic medical record. And so the idea is you want to see the PSC scores going down over time. So they do, but we're just, you know, it's just in the last 6 months that we've got them in there. We're using it.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, Massachusetts has this, what's been going on now for 2 years, I think, to improve how primary care physicians are able to access mental health specialists to improve mental health care for children. So if one were doing the PSC scores over time, if this program that was implemented a couple of years ago was working, you should expect to see the number of positive PSC scores decrease because there's better mental health care. Is that another way of saying this is a way to use this to measure population health?
Yeah, it actually is, and actually the data actually show that. We've looked at 2 years of data, eight quarters of data. The PSC positive rate has gone down slightly from 13% to 12% or something like that. You know, there is a sense that with continued screening and referral, you can see the rates go down a little bit.
And interestingly, this really could also be a process measure in that one could say, just as we would expect primary care pediatricians to be doing developmental screening at certain ages, a lot of people say, Michael especially, say that primary care pediatricians should be doing PSCs on a regular basis, maybe at every well-child evaluation. And we could measure how many pediatricians are doing that, just like we're trying to get pediatricians to do BMI percentiles and see if that's improving over time. But that's only a process measure. It's not an outcome measure, but it could be used in sort of both ways.
So just proceeding along, it sounds like, are there further questions about the impact gap relation to outcomes, or this, that section feels like we've gotten some good information and people seem comfortable with this as an outcome measure. So now if we could, I'm sorry?
We probably need to have the committee vote on that.
Yes. Because that's the threshold. Okay, so how do you vote on it? Could you say simply vote for those who feel it's
the yes-no criteria.
Yes-no, important enough to important to measure. All those who believe that the PSC indicates something sufficiently important to measure.
Five, six, 11, 12, 13. Marlene?
Marlene? Oh, yes.
Okay, so that's 14.
I saw one hand who didn't vote.
How could you see it?
Right. We vote no?
One no.
One no.
Any extensions?
Okay, let's talk a little, if we can, about if you could scroll down to the scientific acceptability component, because that seems a little bit all over the map. Not many voters.
On the scientific acceptability.
So, any comments or concerns about specifications? Is it well specified? Measures of reliability, test, retest, and inter-array reliability, validity, which I still didn't really hear a clear answer for you, actually, on sort of how well this relates to other measures of behavioral and mental health, and how well does it correlate with depression, ADHD, you know, CDCL scores, other, you know, indicators.
If I can have that said, I'm now beyond my competence.
So reliability and validity, I'm not beyond my competence, so giving you that fastball again. The reliability and validity have been established in lots of studies. They're comparable to anything anybody gets of a grief measure. Longer measures like the Achenbach obviously have slightly higher reliability and validity, but not much. In terms of, it was just a study by Bill Gardner and his associates that compared the PSC to a bunch of diagnosis-specific measures like the CDI and RC mass and anxiety, depression, conduct, ADD, and it found that the PSC subscales had similar sensitivity and specificity to those longer and well-accepted kind of gold standard tests. So, again, the PSC is kind of a front-end test that can screen for depression, anxiety, attention, and conduct problems. With the reliability and validity, they're comparable to other accepted standards.
Hi, this is Christy. Sorry to join late. If there are any questions, I just wanted to make sure people knew I was on the line. Christina Patel.
It's great that you're on the line, Christy. We had started discussing the national survey and really deferred. There were so many questions that we felt you were the best person to answer that we deferred consideration. We're currently reviewing the PSC, Pediatric Symptom Checklist, and as soon as we're finished with that, we'll come back and review, go back to your measure. So please do listen in, but now that we're deep into this, we should finish consideration of the PSC.
Right. Just to let you know, I'll be in and out. I'll be in and out. I will do my best. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, if you look at 2C.1, data sample, there is some validation description there, and that, to me, looks pretty reasonable, as reasonable as most of these kinds of screen tests can be. I'm comfortable that the validity is satisfactory.
I would also comment that this score goes down to a pretty low age 4, and I think at that age there aren't very many other validated instruments, and the PSC is really, I think, been in the forefront for that young age group.
But actually, in my practice, we use this as an outcome measure as well. We've got an integrated mental health program as a pilot. It's a large state Medicaid grant in Texas. And interestingly, we're screening with a battery of other tests, MCHAP, mental health tools, peace developmental. And then if we find something, it goes over to a mental health therapist that then does a number of screens. This is one. But I'm virtually certain in the research aspect of this project, this is being used as one of the outcome measures.
And I think theoretically, as part of it is, if the parent thinks the child isn't doing well, then that's an outcome. Sure. They're not doing well.
That's a really important point. It's a little bit less sexy because it's not an MCHAT or it's not something, but in fact that single domain of the parent not thinking the kid is doing well is the
kind of flag, and it actually can be driven down by good supportive interventions of a broad, you know, of many different sorts.
So there is a category in here that says meaningful differences. So if this were to be used as a performance measure, presumably you'd want to be able to say program A is different than program B, or state A is different than state B. It says you hadn't explored that, although you do have, you know, standard deviation. You do have mean and standard deviation measures. Can you, have you really not explored, in the various studies you've done, have you looked at how this can be used to compare performance across programs or sites or things? I was surprised to see.
As an outcome measure?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're looking at the PSC research team, and I took a Greyhound bus down here. We don't have drug company funding. So, you know, we do...
I hope the Bolt bus, you know, it's a
little better. Fun one, right? Anyway, so, you know, there are whole areas of this that we haven't explored. You know, when Chile starts to use it, we sort of shift our attention to working with them and the standardized test scores was big. So some of these population-based things are really new to me, and I have very little familiarity with some of the concepts.
Wouldn't the pre-post use of it qualify, though, in that you're using it to evaluate an intervention? It could be the interventions Donna's talking about or within your clinic.
Charlie?
Yeah.
One question. I'm just looking at the information as submitted. The way the numerator is stated, it just describes the survey. So I'm not sure, how do I count that numerator? How do you, for this measure, and then the denominator is, you know, all children, I guess, and I'm assuming, so
yeah,
all children in a population, I assume, are eligible. So is this the result, the percentage of children for whom their parents filled out a survey, or is it the percent of children for whom that had the survey done and
it was abnormal?
And it was abnormal or normal or something. This is what I'm unclear about, and I don't find the specifications to be particularly precise. I can certainly see where from this tool, using this tool, which seems to be well validated at the individual patient level and has a lot of support, but using it to understand more about the quality of care delivered, a pre and post could be another type of specification, but that isn't what's given to us. So I'm trying to get a handle on what you're proposing is the exact specification. What is it we're going to compare from, you know, about providers? What information about the quality of care do we hope to obtain from this measure?
You know, I think it's a great question. I think one problem comes in on the two different, I think you said yourself, you know, the individual case level is one. On the macro level, one of the things that it's hard to put into words is that just whether, I think Tom said this, whether a screen was given, you know, in pediatrics, the reason it's been pushed nationally is that there's a requirement to use standardized tools to screen for psychosocial problems in pediatrics. So, yes, no, was a screen given. What Massachusetts does is with a bill, they've actually tied it to a billing mechanism, a billing code. You know, if they gave the screen, they billed for it, and we know what happened. So at that level, I think we've done a lot more, or we're doing a lot more.
But you're proposing this as an outcome measure as you heard earlier in conversation, we will have opportunity as a committee to review process measures, and this sounds like it could be a very, very good one, but you're proposing it also as an outcome measure. So what would that number be?
Well, again, I think as Tom said, one idea is the PSC positive rate going down.
So I'm going to be...
Or is the mean score going down?
Well, I'm going to be a little obnoxious. For us to approve it, we have to actually have specifications. So it has to be different than we could consider. It actually has to be, the numerator is either proportion positive, you know, number of children who are positive, and positive is above a cutoff of yada yada, or the mean score, you know. But we actually have to have, like,
written out specifications of numerators and denominators, and so that if Colorado wants to apply it, they'll apply it in the same way that Massachusetts applies it.
So, I mean, I think we're just at the limit of our. We know that mean scores go down. You know, in Mass General, we got in the treatment plan updates that we did the PSC score go down 1 point in the last quarter? So, is that the gold standard number? I don't know, but that's what we're. So, we're just starting to do that. So, we know that mean scores. What's that?
Yeah. So, Marina's was resubmitted to process. I guess I'm my quick take. Jumping quickly to my global judgment is not quite ready. That is, concept is totally right, really excited about the measure, but you haven't presented sufficient specifications for us to make a judgment about whether it is actually a performance measure or not can be used. But that's my quick base, because there aren't specifics, but that might be jumping the gun.
Well, I was going to say, this is all why I asked my first question.
Okay.
I guess what I'm hearing is that now that we've clarified the question, you may be able to recast this as an outcome measure, perhaps not for the full endorsement, but that time limited where you have 12 months to finish up and fill in the holes of test, retest, or whatever is left. I'm thinking it's possible that, Charlie, it's not there, it's just not crafted that way. Obviously, the use of it as a process measure is easier, and I would totally suggest we put that forward to the Part B of this discussion because of the process measure is easier.
This is Heidi. I mean, you can put that as a condition with your recommendation, and they can bring back something, and you will look at it again. So this isn't the last time you could see it. We could ask for a little bit more recrafting, a little more rework, and bring it back to you. If, again, you don't feel that it's quite ready, then you can say that. Or you can say it's time limited or whatever, all of that. But it sounds like you'd like maybe possibly to entertain looking at this again. So we can ask Dr. Murphy to go back and do a little reworking on it if you'd like.
Yeah, I was just not seeing another meeting.
We'll give you a call if you need it.
Okay.
We won't give you a meeting.
So that's very helpful. So I think actually, can I move us almost towards a vote on this or a recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, and I would, what I think I hear in the recommendation is that, Mike, that you come back, that you revise this measure and come back with more detailed specifications for how this could be used as an outcome measure. I'd suggest that rather than approving with a conditional approval, because in part NQF is sort of trying to move away from these conditional approvals.
I mean, I think what you can do is table it, the discussion for now.
Exactly. Yeah. Table it, but please come back with more detailed specifications of how this could be used as an outcome measure.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
In the usability, it says data. In the usability, it says data has been reported to a court monitor, so are a matter of public record, but not yet published. So you use this data and then you give it to the...
But in Massachusetts, there's a legal settlement called the Rosie D. case. The state was sued for providing inadequate mental health to children. And as part of the consent decree agreement, this is part of the consent agreement, which is that every pediatrician has to screen. The agreement was that every pediatrician has to screen for mental health. It turns out that they selected the PSC as one of the instruments. So it's under a court
order. Okay, thank you.
But more it's the process measure that they screen, less that they improve.
And keep up with all these state laws.
I just wanted to clarify, are there any other conditions that that you think would be important to be included to provide feedback for the developer? I know Charlie specified pretty clearly, but I just want to make sure everyone.
I think it would be helpful, and certainly there's been some discussion around there, if you do have data about
you know, what you have found in terms of significant differences pre and post. I think that would be really helpful, recognizing it's early and it's eased for that.
Clearly, we have to go to school and get people that know how to do this and look at our data.
I also would like to think more about this discussion when we talk about future steps, because this is kind of the state of the art. I think what would be really interesting is if you have such a heterogeneity of symptoms in the, you know, and some functioning, and it's a little like the CIS as well, you know, and so what would be very interesting, the Columbia Impairment Scale, which is a 13-item developed by Columbia, and it too kind of combines symptoms and functioning together. And so it would be very interesting, like with your Chile population, like will you have an adequate sample size that we can maybe begin to tease out, you know, the different domains within this? Because I think eventually we've got to get to the point where we're going to be matching symptoms to recommended treatment. And we're not there yet. But I think that's something perhaps, again, we should say best wishes, good luck, good cause. How can we continue this discussion as we think about what the future steps should be around developing quality measures for child mental health?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that's exactly the work we're doing now, looking at items and clusters and what changes with intervention.
Said Lincoln.
So general agreement that we can table this with strong encouragement to come back with additional specifications.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, wonderful conversation. So Christy, are you still on the line?
Hi.
I'm sorry, was that a yes? Christy Bethel?
Hey, I got cut off. I actually, believe it or not, took me about a half hour to get on the call this morning. So, I kept getting on and off, and I just got off, and now I'm back on again. So,
so while we have you, I apologize on behalf of our committee for hassles you had in joining the call. We had started a conversation about Measure 34, which is what we're calling Measure 34, the National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs Quality Measures, which included 15 specific quality measures under the broad rubric of the survey. There were some initial questions which just about survey methodology, you know, response mechanism, completion rate, you know, response rate, completion rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wondered if you could maybe quickly comment on those first.
And just as a caveat, I mean, obviously with the time that we had, there's only so much you can provide, but also so you know, there are incredibly in-depth hundreds of pages manuals on sampling and data collection and scoring of everything that you see. So it was a little bit unclear what to provide. So maybe we can, you know, see what we can do now and then just know there's more, but we want to serve it up as it's needed or wanted in a form that you can, that you want to have it in, which is, of course, always the challenge. So the National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs is a random digit dial survey feeding off of the sampling frame from the National Immunization Survey, and it's done in a way that yields representative samples at the state and national level, and then the weighting is done to account to have that be all the estimates be representative of all children living in each state and the nation, and also adjusting for non-response bias, which is mostly people without telephones and after they've called 20 times. So there's a lot of detailed information about response rate, but depending on how you score it, and there are different ways people score response rate, it's anywhere from 58 to 61, I think, percent.
And in the current year, it's a pretty high response rate. So.
Yeah, but not only that. There's a lot of adjustments made, and there's been a lot of analyses done to sort of torture whether or not we're really missing groups of people who don't have phones or who have only cell phones. And this is an ongoing discussion with a lot of energy being put into trying to optimize the sample and if otherwise adjust on the back end for non-response. There's a lot more to say about that, though, so that's the short answer.
I think that's very helpful. That people, Nancy, you in particular raised questions about the sampling issues, response rate. Do you feel like your responses are sufficiently addressed by that, or do you have any further questions around
the
general survey methodology and response rate and completion and that, since there were sort of broad questions about that survey, since many people on the committee aren't familiar with the TEAMS. Christy, there was also some discussion, and I know you could talk a long time about this, but I think you can also present it concisely, just about the screener and the coherence of that and the issues involved of having such a diverse set of indicators for children with special health care needs, and maybe a brief comment on the rationale or the experience or how coherent that set of children ends up being.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as you know, Charlie, the screener is based on the MCHB definition of children with special health care needs minus the at-risk group. We're trying to actually identify children who currently have a special health care need. Pretty much defined as having an ongoing condition, at least one, most of them have two or more, and that condition has resulted in an above routine need for health services of a type or amount than is required by children generally. And the screener, again, I know Charlie, you'll remember this, started out with about 139 concepts defining consequences and needs that children with chronic conditions have, and then through psychometric testing and medical chart review and administrative data reviews and comparisons, basically identified the five things that all of them have, all of the children that we want to include have. So it's truly a screener. It's not a needs assessment of everything children need. They share a lot in common. They're distinctly different from children who do not meet the screener in every way that we've been able to to assess that, and we have over a million cases of data, and we always reanalyze it. Having said that, there is diversity. Even if you have a group of children with asthma, they fall along a continuum of need and functioning and other characteristics and consequences. That's true here, too. It's no different than any single health condition. And so what we've done is we've created a way to stratify even within the screener for how children meet the screener to get some at complexity of need and complexity of severity. And so there are several papers published on that. There's a new paper out by Adam Carl on the psychometrics, independently done. So we have a number of papers that we can present about a variety of issues, whether it's, you know, how the screener holds together or who the kids are that are represented, why they're different from children who don't meet the screener, whether we're missing cases that we would want to include, and so on. So if you had more specific questions, I could come right in and tell you. But, yes, there is a range of children represented, but all of them share the experience of having an ongoing condition and experiencing consequences of above-routine need or use of services.
That's very helpful and very concise, and I appreciate that, Christine. Bonnie or anyone else with sort of questions about the screener per se and the population that's then reflected in the survey and again, its importance or relevance. I think that another set of questions then, and really where we were kind of getting a little bollocks up, was the actual quality indicators themselves. Do you want, because one option would have been to submit each of those as separate measures, but them, and again, I know time was short and I'm not sure what other conversations happened in the background.
It was really short, and at the time when there was a lot of other things, I think I was at your meeting on child measures when they were due, and the call had just come out a few days before, so it was short. But basically, this is data that these measures that you see before you already have data collected on them, and there's a plan to collect that data on a routine basis. They provide data at a population level, which I understand is an NQF category or unit of analysis. So they're valuable now for purposes of looking at state and sub-state data, sub-state meaning subgroups of children within states. So with that frame, it's not like we're putting a measurement system forward saying this is a way to collect data. This is data that exists that could be endorsed, if you will, by NQF as measures that are meaningful for some of the categories and units of analysis of measurement that are priority. So that's one reason to put it together as a group. Having said that, anybody could take any single piece of it, like the medical home module, obviously collecting the other analytic variables that are needed, and really just collect those pieces and call it a measure. Usually when people do a survey, they try to get the biggest bang for the buck and end up being able to get a wide range of information about health risk, analytic variables, and risk factors, along with quality measures at the same time. So typically people would take a survey that gets you 15 different measures. Having said that, though, anybody could take it and just collect the medical home module with all the requisite other variables that are needed to stratify or risk adjust it. But that was the rationale for including it as a group. Also, we couldn't unbundle them. We have a whole website that takes them one by one and gives the numerator the denominator, and we could have submitted that, but I don't think it could have been reviewed. So it's not. I'm not sure what the format you would want that would be tenable for you, to review.
We're not sure either, but so we're just working it out.
But we have a lot, and I think that they do vary the measures that are within there in terms of where they've come from. Obviously, the screener was validated and adopted into the survey before the survey took place. The medical home measure was a specific year-long measurement development and testing process, well, more than a year, but formally a year. Some of the other ones are items that come from other surveys. Some items were developed and tested cognitively, and then subsequently people have published on most of the measures in a way that it's been through a pretty extensive peer review process where there's had to be a demonstration that the items are what they say they are. So there's a number of different ways to come at the validity question as well.
Could I just ask my same question that I asked the last measure developer related to this list in terms of the use of this information as an outcome measure as opposed to structural process? Because I'm echoing to what Dr. McInerney said before, and I agree with him. And to me, the list is variable in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't clear to me, actually, with the call to measures about that. I agree with you. What the, with our medical home, what if it just wasn't clear to me what that would be categorized as, so we were generous in including things.
But, this is a mixture of process and outcome measures.
Yeah, I mean,
the one that says proportion who are screened early and continuously. I assume that since you put it forward, you're regarding variation or cross that as an outcome measure.
People had, again, the call for measures didn't make it clear to me where you were, there is a continuum of what people think of as outcome. So if you're speaking health outcomes, then there's a subset within there. And it's very tricky to get at health outcomes, but there are some that are in there, like how much a child is affected. But I don't have the list in front of me, so if you could maybe call one out in specific, I could address that.
I guess my general question is, have you developed any of the evidence that the individual items are linked to child health outcomes or predictive of child health outcomes?
We have
in a
in a formal way as opposed to just on the face of it.
Right. Well, keep in mind that the national survey is, and this would be true if at the state level, is a cross-sectional survey. And so the validation is really internal to the sampling frame that's there. And, yes, there are all the associations you would expect to show up, that children with certain levels of system performance, if you will, whether it's adequate insurance or having a medical home, vary as expected on the other more outcomes-oriented frames, adjusting for all other things that you might want to adjust for that also might contribute to variations in those outcomes. So that kind of data does exist. And then there are separate studies where people have used pieces of the survey in independent studies with independent data collection where some of that also comes out. So to gather that together would be a task. And I think the question was, is this of enough interest to justify moving forward with that level of work?
I think actually we may need to go one by one to actually answer some of the questions, if that's not too painful. I mean,
it's not too painful, but it's an extensive process, and that's why I was not clear how we were going to really proceed with this.
Yeah, but I was even thinking as a committee task right now. I mean, I could say, for example, your first. I appreciate you don't have a list in front of you. So the first one was the effect of a child's conditions on their daily life.
Right.
So presumably that's an outcome measure. That is, there is some indicator of, again, I don't know what the response categories are and what that actually means to say effect on their daily life, but I'm sure that's something like impaired or not impaired or interferes or doesn't interfere or something along those lines.
This may sound really wild, but because the committee is needing this information, it actually is all up on our website. Like if you went to the website and clicked on that measure, there's a box that pops up that is numerator, denominator. If you want to see the exact questions that are in it, you just click and they come up. And I'm not sure how to be more efficient than that without giving you a binder that's like 3 inches thick. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just an idea.
I can get that up for our team. It's cshcndata.org, right?
Yeah. And so if you go to the actual measure, there's a details box at the end that you click on that pops up a pop-up box, and then within that, there's additional things that you can click on. And we have not summarized all the articles that have been published on these different measures that are showing associations, and I wasn't clear what the context that you would most want to see them for purposes of, because you have the population health area now. It seems to me that they're most relevant to that, where you're not necessarily trying to pin down the association with the delivery system each child is associated with, but rather looking at population health. So I think that that's the easiest context in which to endorse these measures, if you will. Stratifications can occur by type of insurance, by all kinds of other variables, but it is not going to link it up to a health plan or something like that. So that's not the model that it would be appropriate to view these measures through at this time, unless the survey were recommended to be applied at that unit of analysis, which, you know, is reasonable, but would be a different specification altogether in terms of sampling and risk adjustment.
So we're actually getting your survey up on the screen here as we go. So we should presumably click on the 2005-2006 national survey, right, of HCN?
Mm-hmm. And while you're doing that, Charlie, I'd just say from a context point of view, the survey is designed with the close involvement of a technical expert panel sponsored by the Federal Maternal and Child Health Bureau, and various tests along the way, either through our organization or another organization, often the CDC or the National Center for Health Statistics. So before items or measures are on the table at all, they've been through that process, not unlike a group like you all, I mean, in terms of the concept of a technical expert panel. So if that gives you any comfort, I wanted to make sure you knew that.
We're having a little trouble getting very quickly to your numerator, denominator questions. Can you...
Yeah. Well, if you go to the measure, and I presume that you know how to do that, you... we're redesigning the site right now to get at it at various number of ways. But if you go to the core outcomes, key indicators and core outcomes are the chart book measures.
Yeah.
That are, yeah. And then you, there should be a category that you'll see consistently and affecting children's life, for example. You should find that measure on the list.
No, sorry. I'm doing it in parallel to the screen, which is not a good thing to be doing, so I should be...
Okay. Yeah, I wish I was there to help you. Well, anyway, at the end of the... You find the measure, and then at the very end of it, there's a little... I think it's in blue, in parentheses, the word details. And if you click on that, the pop-up box comes up that basically walks you through the numerator and the denominator. And keeping in mind that the denominator is all children for whom this question was asked at a population basis. And it's representative of the population of each state. That's a question actually that's asked of all, about all children who qualify as having a special health care need. So there isn't any exclusion criteria for that one. Care coordination, there are exclusion criteria, for example. So, and that would be, that's made clear as possible in a summary way in that pop-up box. And then if you want to see the actual items that are asked, they're highlighted and you click on them and then it comes up. So this is one of the simplest ways we've been able to figure out how to bind people into it without literally providing a hard copy document that is, that's also possible though.
I have a feeling, the information is all here and wonderful. Probably not an efficient use of the committee's time for me to be working through it. And I don't know, what committee, what do you think here?
I would agree.
Yeah. I talked with Tom and Nalini about this, and I think that there's a lot here. And it wasn't clear to me exactly how you'd want it, and also the time is not sufficient, or, you know, I wouldn't want to invest so much time putting it in a format if that wasn't the one you wanted. And so maybe this discussion can be, is there interest in looking at the national surveys, the data they produce, the measures they produce at a population health level? And if so, what would you want to know, or how would you want to know it?
Okay.
It's just going to be a recurring theme for me. I think that the survey itself is, you know, wonderfully developed and rich with information. The question at hand is about child health outcome measures, and they have to be well specified, and that's what we need to evaluate. We just need to see the information in sufficient detail that we can do that. I'd be willing to allow a definitional issue about when something that may look to others like a process or structural measure can in fact be construed as an outcome measure, but I would like to hear the steward articulate the rationale for that so that we could all be sure that we understand that.
Yeah, well, I actually would want to hear it more from your guys' angle, because it wasn't clear in the call for measures where you would bound that concept. So that's why there are some things in there that I would consider to be, you know, it depends on what outcome level you're talking about, intermediate outcome, long-term outcome, or system outcome, like having experience of a medical home. Some people would call that an outcome. Some people would call that a process. So I think that it'd be great for us to hear about that. But again, if you're going to do a survey, or the survey data already exists and will exist again, the CSHDN survey is completely completing its administration for the 2009-10 right now. It's not like you go out and just collect data on one piece of it. It's a comp, creates a picture of performance for a population of children across process and outcome. And so that's one of the reasons for presenting it as a holistic survey.
So, we had a discussion earlier, the analogy to CAPS. So, you know, CAPS is approved as a tool and there are a variety of measures that come out of that. And again, I think this committee is comfortable with the validity of this as a, you know, high-quality survey. I think the question that we're still wrestling with, and again, the question we're still wrestling with is the utility, validity, the validity and utility of some of the specific measures that are derived from this.
And I think
secondarily, whether some of these are best considered processes or outcomes. What I think is we can quickly go through the list that you gave and figure out which ones are no-brainer outcomes, like, you know, missing school or impact on function and things like that. And we, the staff, maybe during lunch, maybe some other time, we can pull the specifications, or maybe we'll have to have a conference call or put some of this off till tomorrow. We can pull the specifications from that, from the survey, from your website pretty easily. We just haven't done that yet. So I think that's one thing that we need to do. We can go through this list, and like I said, some of them are clearly outcome measures. There are some that are on the fence, like having a medical home. And again, I think those are difficult. I'm not sure how much usefulness it is for us to really spend a lot of time.
Charlie, can I just jump in? This is Christine Trigo-Winkler from NQF. Just in other aspects of the Outcomes Project, we've looked at other measures that are composite measures and that have been a mix of process and outcome measures. Because it had an element of the outcome measure, it was included. So I don't know that we need to be quite so black and white. I think the issue around this is the question of this measure, as defined and submitted, gives us 15 results. And so I would consider it a multi-part measure, if you will. There is no summary that would turn it into a single composite. So it's a multi-part measure. And I think the question for the committee is this a useful, meet all the criteria measures, given it has 15 parts to it, and look at it from that perspective. The fact that it's a mixture of process and outcome measures, I don't think you need to spend a whole lot of time on.
And I'd love to have the opportunity to come back again, too, because there is a composite version of the core outcomes for CSHCN that is, you know, how many of the core outcomes children have. And it's a systems outcomes performance measure in that regard. It's really, you know, and it's very minimal. The bar is very low in terms of these measures. These are, if anything, giving a positive view of how things are going just by nature of the fact that they're parent report and they can't be specified, you know, in really, really detailed ways. But we do have a composite, which is proportion of children meeting all five system criteria, 4, 3, 2, or 1. And that is very aligned with issues like having adequate insurance or other process measures and so on and so forth. So there are some ways to score them in a composite-like way, but I didn't set that forward because of time, mostly, and also because I wasn't sure what would be of interest. But that is possible to do even more than what you're seeing and has been done.
I see no way for us to not basically have staff and maybe even committee members working with staff come back to you and try to get – I know you have the information – I know a lot of it's on the website. I think we're going to have to sort of boil this out, synthesize it, and come back. I can't think of any other way around it.
Yeah, I figured that would happen. I mean, it was sort of a stretch even to get it to you in the level of detail. I mean, it was a lot of unexpected, you know, and quick turnaround, and we did our best. So, but with your conversation and feedback, we'll be able to go the next step.
This is two in a row that I'm doing that on, so
that may be reflective of the, you know, the quickness and the process and things, and it may just be natural part of working out what you need.
Charlie, if I'm identifying Plan B, if you're not in a position right now to recommend the measure, then Plan B is a definite alternative.
I mean, I think because my sense is actually the work group that reviewed this did not feel comfortable enough with what they saw to go forward with it, and I think that's more because the supporting information simply isn't there and on familiarity with some of the details of the measure. So I would rather than have sort of the up or down vote on kind of what we see now, I would much rather we do spend the time and go through that and bring it back.
And can I ask, in the sort of re-looking at the data that we do get to look at the composite measure?
Yeah.
The details of that, I'd really like to see that.
Good point.
I have to say that these last two we put in promising practices.
Yeah. Yeah. With the difference between the last one is on this one there are specifications. We just haven't teased them out. So they exist. This has been used for comparative analysis before. There's actually a website you can go to compare Alaska to Montana if you want on sort of any one of these metrics and whether there's significant changes over time, et cetera. So I think the difference between this one and the last one is the last group, great concept, being used for a variety of things, but really hasn't been specified in frames that we could use. This one has been specified but hasn't been presented to us in a way that we synthesized.
I have just a quick question for Marina. This is Lee Christie. You've got a measure with 15 parts, what we're talking about here. I think that was how you described it. As we consider some of the 15 parts, and will we end up voting? No. I'm trying to figure out if we say we like this, but we really don't like questions 7, 14, and 3, what have we done?
This is Raina Christie. Essentially, since it's submitted as a multi-part measure, it's an all or none from that perspective. However, it could be conditional with removing 6, 12, or whatever. But I don't know if that's something that's, you know, amenable. So it would be part of this discussion back and forth. But given it was submitted as a multi-part measure, that's what you're looking at.
Tom McInerney, really, when you look at these measures, there may not be any correlation between the measures at all. And my argument would be we should make this 15 different measures because someone could have a medical home and a usual source of care and insurance, but they may not have family-centered care, or they may not have easy access because the practice is overwhelmed because they do such a good job. I don't know. But so really the problem is if you look at these, you're going to see some are going to be high, some are going to be low, some are going to be in between, and then I don't know how you put it all together. And in my mind, it might be better just to say make it clean, make it 15 different measures, and just look at each one.
The other thing to keep in mind is they also submitted another large survey measure that's actually comprised of 22 individual measures. And Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've gathered is that some of those smaller individual measures do overlap somewhat between the two surveys, and I think the one on care coordination may be a good example of that overlap. So once we get to those other measures, which are all falling under group 3, if I'm not mistaken, once the committee kind of looks through each of those individual measures, you may find your ideas and outcomes or decisions may be a little different depending on that. And I also think that it's important that we look at this composite measure that was not submitted, obviously, for the group, but it sounds like that would be valuable for the group to review and possibly as a component of the larger set of measures.
Maybe it would be useful to try to walk through the committee process on those item measures because, in a sense, they have presented some of them from that framework where I think they have, for whatever reason, chosen those as possible outcome measures, and we may find ourselves able to approve those, and it may also be useful
to the group to figure out how to present the broader group in a way that would be helpful.
So, Kathy, are you suggesting that we right now start moving through some of the individual measures within those 15, or?
The ones I submitted.
Yeah.
No. The ones that were submitted in this.
The separate ones.
Yeah, the other ones.
In other words, 22 and group
3. I think 22
might be others.
Right.
Okay, so again, as a little bit with the previous one, where the motion on the table basically is to table the broad consideration of actually both 33 and 34, although we actually haven't seen 33 in detail yet. For staff to work with Christy to come up with a clearer presentation with additional background data for that, and whether we, assuming the sense of the group is we want to see the full composite measure, we want some reflection for decision again between the steward and the staff as to whether it comes back as separate items or whether it comes back as a multi-part item. We're not making that judgment yet as a committee. So, okay. And then the next idea on the table is moving to some of the individual items.
So 35 actually would be the next one.
Okay. So you want to put up 35 is children who take medication for ADHD, emotional or behavioral issues. Okay. Anyone who was on that work group want to describe either their impressions or walk us through the assembled vote of the committee, which is sitting up on the screen?
Charlie, I need to actually pull up the thing on my computer because I can't see the screen, but my initial take on this measure was it seemed more like a process measure to me than an outcome measure. So with that brief comment, I will try to find my document here.
We were a small sample size.
Yeah.
The psychiatric is even smaller. but I think that my initial impression was not lukewarm, only because I looked again at the numerator details. And what I struggled with most was that medication is often indicated for ADHD, but not necessarily indicated for this other broad group, other emotional behavioral issues. And so I think, again, it kind of highlights taking this issue and putting it on sort of the next step, future steps, because there is variation in the level of evidence for treatment for particular psychiatric disorders. And
I think we're getting caught up in sort of
a dynamic where initially we were describing mental health problems, psychosocial problems, mental health problems, behavioral, emotional behavioral, serious emotional behavioral disorders. But there's now a little bit of a trickling where maybe we can better specify diagnosis and link that to a particular recommended treatment. We're not there. But again, when you lump this together, for me it seems very problematic to make any sort of assessment of whether that child got good care.
And don't you think about, you said about the controversy is that looking at the age group 2 to 17, you start talking about mental health problems and things, you really are going to get into off-label use of medication, and it's hard to second guess. And so, I mean, that really brings up a controversy when people are trying to deal with this now. What do you do with the children, say, at 3 that I know some that really needed medications, but you don't really want to put them in this group? I mean, that's they may be getting good care, but that just is, like you said, that's not where you want to go.
And, I mean, I'm really worried about having the 2 to 3 and 4-year-olds mixed up in this group,
mm-hmm.
because I think the literature is unclear about whether you should be really calling ADD, and I think you're definitely at off-label use of meds. And I don't agree that medications for other emotional disorders should be in this group. This group needs to be clean. And I think the most latest discussions in the ICD-10 about the elimination of bipolar disorder that became a big group, that's another group that's going to be mixed up in here that people are using medications on, where that practice is really being looked at right now as to whether that's good practice.
There's also one more moving target, I think, when we think about child mental health, and again, this is probably for tomorrow's discussion, and that is the changes in the DSM-5. So even, you know, this debate about the age, well, they've thrown out the age of onset for the ADHD diagnosis. But again, I don't think the evidence is there for the younger child. And so, and then if you're going to be talking about the controversy of bipolar disorder, then that's going to also, again, I think for future steps and probably for many years, start thinking about, well, how in the world is this dysregulation syndrome diagnosis that is being proposed? So.
I think there's also, when you bring that up, if you have a really clean, and we're talking about ADHD, then that's an opportunity to look at to see about quality of care in those kids, because there is some evidence that kids are being over-medicated. You're right. We need to look at one thing, make it really clean, define it, so we can do some quality improvement.
I just want to echo that a little bit. I mean, I think this is a measure that's very prone to abuse. I mean, there's a lot of children with ADHD who probably don't need to be on medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So if this measure goes out and say, well, 8% of your kids are treated and 92% are not, is that good or bad? It's really going to be difficult to say at this point.
You know, it's interesting because the data might suggest sometimes it's over-medicated if you look at Medicaid claims data. But when you look at actual treatment adherence, it's incredibly low. And so I think, again, this goes to sort of tomorrow's discussion because there has to be much more emphasis on the family centeredness and the parent preference for treatment around mental health problems and how that also changes over time for that parent and that child. And so I think, you know, on the table, again, for maybe future steps is, how do we also integrate parent preference in treatment when thinking about scoring the indicator?
So I think from a threshold perspective, I mean, no one could argue that the use of psychotropic drugs in children is an important issue, and there are many controversial elements to it. But this measure, that is the proportion of children with some form of behavioral problem who are on medication, one could really argue whether this meets threshold criteria for importance because the meaning of the measure is so unclear. So I would actually propose a quick threshold vote on this, on the importance criteria. Let me know what you think. I'm misinterpreting importance, but at least from my perspective, I'm having a hard time lining up this measure with any concerns people might have. And so I'd like to say it doesn't meet the criteria for importance, and we could not even get into the issues of feasibility and usability and specifications and all that.
Maybe this is just a different way to ask the same question, but as a non-clinician, my question is, if we know the answer, what do we know? How do we deal with it?
Maybe
it's taking. I can't even interpret it. So I guess I would second the comments that Charlie has made about maybe this doesn't meet the most fundamental of all of our thresholds.
I just wondered if the measure developer wanted to respond before we voted, in case we missed something.
Christy? Sorry. Is the phone still there? Marlene, are you still there?
Still here.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure the phone was still working.
Christy said she'd be in and out.
Yeah.
So,
she's out. Anyway.
So anyhow, I would propose that we have a vote on importance. All those who would vote this is sufficiently, I'll do it on the positive this way. Let's say this is sufficiently important to go forward, that it meets the threshold criteria. Raise your hand. Okay.
Marlene?
Can I just clarify, does this mean, though, that more information will be forthcoming then, all the stuff we've talked about?
On this one, no. We're saying if this is voted no,
that's it.
Then we don't want to know any more about this question, you know, about this particular item.
Right, but if it's yes, then more information will come.
Well, yes, then we have to have a broader conversation about this measure.
Okay, all right, yes, then I vote yes.
Okay, so it's one.
All those who vote that no, this does not meet the importance threshold for further consideration. Alan, are you voting?
I'm having so much trouble with the computer.
Are you abstaining, Alan?
I'm abstaining right now. I just lost all my USB ports.
Okay, so one in favor, 13 against, one abstaining. Okay, so doesn't meet Ellen?
So, Charlie, I'm sorry, not to put a too fine a point on it. It's not that I would say I don't want to move it forward because it's not important. I think it's an important issue, but I think so it's not right in my mind to say it's not important. It just doesn't meet our other criteria for what we're trying to measure. Is that
right?
The way it's written.
I mean, every issue is important. This measure isn't constructed in a way that meets the criteria.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for the record, I think the way this measure is constructed is that's why it's not important, because the construction doesn't meet importance, not that the topic isn't important. And I don't think that's what our charge is.
Okay.
Also, just to reassure everyone, NQF has already endorsed several measures, process measures around management of children with ADHD and appropriate follow-up care for those on medication. And so it's not as if the topic doesn't have some measures associated with it already.
Okay.
Let's move on.
We got this. Even with an abstain.
Okay, so we're about 12:20. I think it would be worth going through another measure that, again, was submitted by CAMI, an individual measure. And after that, we can go ahead and probably break for lunch. But if we could get through that last bit of measure, we would have at least completed what we said we were going to complete before lunch. So that's good. So this is measure 37. And this is a measure of children living with illness, the effects of condition on daily life. And this measures the extent to which conditions of children with special health care needs result in limitations of their daily activities despite health care services received. So, again, we'll open this up to the group for discussion, looking at, of course, importance and scope as kind of the first item.
So again, can we hear from
the NS one. I guess my biggest concern was I thought maybe this is more of a severity indicator,
in that depending on the type of depending on the care, some children would get better and some people would remain or maintain a certain level of functioning. And it didn't seem like I could really interpret meaning of this indicator.
Anya, are you looking for risk adjustment?
No, I was thinking more in terms of, again, more clinically, and maybe this is a problem, but some disorders don't get better and will always have a certain limitation of functioning. And even under good care, for example, like an autistic child, you're going to maintain a certain level of functioning. And whereas a striking example would be an ADHD kid, with on proper medication, behavioral treatment, and special ed, they might get, that their function might improve dramatically. So I wouldn't be able to tease that out.
Also, to add to that, there are kids with special health care needs that are severe who are going to get worse. And so the idea is that you have to support them as they get worse, but that's even harder to evaluate. They need good care, but they're going to deteriorate.
All that being, well, okay, maybe to be more formal, should first wrestle with the importance issue. Do you think this is important topic? That is, the problem's prevalent enough. There's likely to be some variability across jurisdictions or systems. There may be disparities. This may reflect disparities in care. Again, those are the criteria for importance. Again, this is the threshold for then, do we go on to some of the...
I don't have the specs in front of me. Can we answer some of those questions from the materials submitted?
What it says is 38.5% of children with special health care needs, health conditions have a moderate effect on their daily activities.
Does that surprise you?
No.
No.
It's an indication that this is
right.
A big deal as opposed to a little deal.
Correct. So then I think I would want to know, given that, what more information.
The range across states is from 18% in Iowa to 30% in Oregon now. So there is variability across states.
And we don't know how that correlates with the conditions we're talking about.
We do know that poor children have conditions that consistently affect their daily lives more than twice as often, 35 to 15%. Kids with a medical home, twice as likely to have health conditions that consistent. So that actually, kids without a medical home are twice as likely to have a health condition that consistently affects their lives, 30 to 15%. So there is some.
So,
if
so
you have a medical home,
right.
You are half as likely to have a health condition
right.
That affects.
So you get a... You can drill down, in other words, and look at different dimensions based on the answers to these questions.
The way unfortunately, my USB ports seem to have died or having trouble, so I'm not able to look at the specifications very well. But as the way I read the summary of the question, this refers to a population of children who are getting services and are still having their lives are still affected. Am I reading it correctly or not? If I'm reading it correctly, what you're dealing with is the baseline of their special health care need, and therefore all you're identifying is the floor of what is possible. Now, if I'm not reading it correctly, I don't know what the wording is.
The denominator is all children who ages 0 to 17 who have special health care needs.
Mm-hmm. Special health care needs is either because you have a condition or because you receive services that are more than other children, or that you have some form of therapy.
Okay. And I can't get them because I don't have the specifications in front of me.
I'm not at risk. I'm sorry?
Oh, I don't have the specifications because during lunch I'll have to see what's going on. My computer.
Scroll down to 288.
It's going to be the result of a single question for those who are asked.
Think about the answer to Bonnie's question about severity and whether, I don't know how this questionnaire is constructed, but just trying to think about if the questionnaire is constructed consistent with good care someone with disabilities might have, if it's constructed around, I'm thinking, except for maybe ventilated assisted patients, even those that are
near vegetative with tracheostomy still can be transported to school and spend a day in school and be cared for. Would that be, you know, if they can go to school and be cared for without multiple interventions, would that be counted as the acceptable level of daily activity? And if that's impaired, is that issue? It's, I think, just a matter of whether the question is asked appropriate to the best possible outcome from someone with that level of disability.
Yeah, the
application. Yeah. Short question. Can you scroll up to
this? Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Scroll up to the initial statement.
My take on this is that what we're struggling with is whether or not this is all crafted scientifically so that we could understand variation as a quality measure, and that those are really kind of part of the scientific issue here, but that it's meeting my criteria for important as crafted as even meeting my criteria as an outcome measure.
Right.
And we are hearing about gaps.
Yeah.
Now, it may fall down when we talk about the scientific issues in terms of Donna's issue around is the question crafted in a way that all people would answer it, and Bonnie's around what I would regard as risk adjustment, and then the trajectory of disease and what's preventable. Those are different issues to me, but I think my answer to you, Charlie, is yes, it passes the first threshold for getting into that broader discussion.
So why don't I call a vote on whether people think this is sufficiently important to proceed with the conversation so that we can go on. So we'll have a vote on that. All who believe, who vote yes, this is meets the threshold criteria for importance, so that we can then go into the more detailed issues around disability, disability, et cetera. So all those, yes.
Marlene?
Yes.
Thank you. That's 14. And that was everybody.
Okay, good. Okay. Let me just read the item.
I abstain because I don't have.
Okay.
I'm kind of.
Let me just read the item because I'm so proud of
it.
Okay.
It says, during the past 12 months, how often have blank medical, behavioral, or other health conditions, emotional development, whatever it is, how often has Susie's condition affected his or her ability to do things other children their age does? That's sort of the question. Okay, so it's a very broad question.
Wow.
They're
made it possible or inhibited it?
Yes. At least that's question C, Q, whatever it is, 2. And then also says question 3 is supposed to be in here, but great. So anyhow, C3Q, section 3, question 2. That was, and I can try to find what question 3 is. So, but at least you get that. Does that help? Maybe it didn't. But now you know what the question So why don't we then continue? We've talked about it meets the importance criteria. What are the next set of criteria, Nicole, that we should be considering?
Scientific acceptability.
Scientifically acceptable.
Yeah, okay.
So comments from the reviewers as to its level of scientific acceptability?
So I do see it here that it specifically says that it's not risk-adjusted, and so when you gave that opening question and it's not risk-adjusted, I think it doesn't answer Bonnie and my concern about appropriateness and being able to assess the results, because they don't match the expectations, I think, of the need, that their, you know, their function or their what their true function could be.
Isn't it the validity question? Is it really measuring their ability to prove their
activity of daily living as compared to other children their age or compared to children with similar conditions.
Well, that's what we need to be.
But if you're the next item, by the way, and I'm not quite sure how different it is, does X's medical, behavioral, or other health condition affect his or her ability to do things a great deal, some or very little. So I guess that's the first one is, does it affect it? And then the next question is, does it affect it a great deal? Somewhat or very little. That's sort of the severity of impact on function or on daily life.
Well,
let's go back to Kathy's earlier observations, though, depending if this is applied at a population level. So if you're comparing Alaska and Indiana, or Ohio and Oregon, which is, I guess, what they were comparing,